podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. The show originally aired on the Premier Networks, 200 stations coast to coast, on Sunday, December 13th, 2020. This is episode 1,754. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast comes to you from TWiT's LastPass Studios. Securing every access point in your company does not have to be a challenge. LastPass unifies access and authentication to make securing your employees simple and secure, even when they're working remotely. Check out LastPass.com/TWiT to learn more. This episode of the Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by LastPass. Don't wait till the end of the year to get strong security. Start solidifying your cybersecurity strategy with the award-winning LastPass today. Go to LastPass.com/TWiT to find out how they can help you. And by Twilio. Strengthen your customer relationships by uniting communications across your entire business. Get everything you need to build and deliver a new customer experience with Twilio. Go to Twilio.com to learn more. And by Manscaped. Who's the best in men's below-the-belt grooming? Manscaped. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. Get 20% off plus free shipping at manscaped.com/twit. Well, hey, hey, hey. How are you today? Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, big screen TV, surround sound, Mac, Windows, Linux, anything on your mind. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, you want to talk about high tech, that's what I'm here for. I'm here for you. 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada, outside that area. You can still call, but you got to use Skype out or something like that to call. Something digital, some sort of digital thing that can call a phone number. 8888-ASK-LEO. Have you seen Amazon? Last week we talked about Sidewalk, which is Amazon's interesting and I don't think necessarily nefarious plan to create a low speed, they actually call it LoRa, long range, low speed network all over town. If you have an Amazon device, Sidewalk is on by default. Everything except the very first generation Amazon Echoes. So your Echoes, your doorbells, your Ring doorbells, your Ring cameras, anything like that. That's got a chip in it. They must have been planning this because even the second generation Echoes have this. They must have been planning this for a while. But they have this chip that will borrow a little bit, just a little bit, just borrow a tiny, teeny, weeny bit of your your internet and spread it around the neighborhood to create a what they call a mesh network. And for initially they proposed with Sidewalk some, I think, kind of sort of useful things. For instance, if you and your neighbors and everybody have Amazon devices, and by the way, again, this is on by default. You have to turn it off. I would say leave it on. Having, you know what, my security guy, Steve Gibson, we do a security podcast called Security Now. He looked at all the inside technical details. He said, yeah, it's private. It's safe. It's secure. It's not opening any back doors. And it's using a tiny bit of bandwidth. And by the way, in a way, you get that back because it also uses a tiny bit of your neighbor's bandwidth and their bandwidth. And so you can get, I guess, someday, they're not selling it yet, a little dog tag, for instance, that will spot Fido wherever he is in the neighborhood because there's this little kind of network that Fido's tag is connecting to as he wanders around. Not, you know, because after he leaves, you know, more than 100 feet away from your house, you can't see him with your Wi-Fi, but the neighbor's Wi-Fi can. It's not even the neighbor's Wi-Fi. The neighbor's Amazon devices can. They're selling a little mailbox sensor. If you have one of those rural route mailboxes that are, you know, not in the door of your front door, but in you know, out in front of the house or down the road, down the driveway, whatever, you put a little sensor in there. It happens to have a little repeater so it can spread the sidewalk network. So they would like you to put that down at the end of the driveway, right? But it also lets you know when the mail comes. Like Lurch. Mail's in. And a lot of people very upset about this. We talked about it a couple of weeks ago, I think, or last week. Just the notion of Amazon just saying, look, we're going to borrow some of your internet. But it's a tiny amount. They say never more than 500 megabytes a month, and probably a lot less than that. And again, if you use it, you'll be borrowing the neighbors too, so you can kind of get it back. I think in the long run, maybe this is about for Amazon, well, I don't know. I was going to say spotting their delivery vehicles, but I'm sure they have trackers in all of those. UPS does, FedEx does. They know. You've gotten the text. I love this. Is it from FedEx? Your package is 9 stops away. Now it's 8 stops away. I love that. But they know that because there's trackers in the vehicles. So I don't think it's that. Maybe there'll be trackers on the packages? That'd be kind of interesting. If you're what I have, we have a guy who works for us, has had half a dozen packages stolen this month from his, you know, apartment complex. Because they leave them out by the mailbox and somebody says, oh, look, Amazon stuff and takes it. Well, if this sidewalk network, Amazon's network, were turned on, you'd know where your package was. Then Amazon is selling now something that I actually got and I was wearing for a while. Now I'm not sure. Called the Halo Band. It's a $65 smart band. It's not, I don't want to say a smart watch because there's no face on it. You can't tell the time with it. It's just like a Velcro thing. Sorry, hook and loop thing you put around your wrist. And the goods, the works are inside. You know, not outside your wrist, but inside there's a bump on your wrist that tells you things like your, you know, the normal things, heart rate and how far you've walked. But it also does two things. they're a little questionable. One, it has a microphone, and you have to turn this on. It's not on by default. That listens to your tone of voice. You can press a button and say, remember what I was doing at that conversation. Or just, you can monitor yourself all day, and it'll say, you sounded a little angry, or you sounded happy most of the day. You were a little down about 2 p.m. I left it on for a few days. It was kind of interesting. I think fairly accurate. You know, I was doing shows, doing podcasts. So a lot of the times, you sound hopeful. You sound interested. Stuff like that. Not once in the 3 days did I yell at anybody. That's good. But if you had a tendency to lose your temper, this would be, I guess, kind of cool. The other thing they ask you to do, and I did not do this, is strip down, yes, to your skivvies and take photos of yourself so they can estimate your body fat percentage, and then you would do that over a period of time. Senator Amy Klobuchar sent a letter to Amazon saying, actually, she sent it to the Health and Human Services Secretary asking Alex Azar, what are you doing to make sure that information is protected? Klobuchar said, I think this is even more intrusive than many of these products, and I had already been concerned. This one takes it to the nth degree. Well, true. It's bold of Amazon at this time of extra introspection or inspection or investigation by the federal government to put something like this out. But remember, you buy it, you turn it on, you say okay. So it's up to you whether you're going to take nudie pictures of yourself. Amazon says, we don't send voice recorders to our servers. We send the recordings to your phone, and that's where they're analyzed. So they're safe. Same thing with the pictures. So you're safe. Well, no, actually, they delete the recordings, but the body fat photos are sent to the Amazon cloud for processing, then deleted. Amazon says, we're not going to sell the data or even share it or even target you with sales pitches. You look a little fat. You need a girdle? That would be embarrassing. It's interesting. Interesting. I don't know. It doesn't bother me. Amazon's letting you opt in. Sidewalk, assuming it's secure and private, and it seems to be, would you turn it off? If you have an Amazon, you need the Amazon Echo app. It's the A-word app. I don't like to say that out loud. I don't want to trigger anybody. or anybody's device, I guess I should say. It's the Alexa app. You know what I'm talking about? And if you go into it in the Alexa app and you go to your settings, you'll see in the settings that there is, let's see, a settings account. I guess you got to go to counter settings. And then there's a thing called Amazon Sidewalk. So they bury it a little bit. So a word app settings, Amazon settings, Amazon side, or well, it's account settings. Let's go back up. How many clicks is this? So here's the A word app. Let's see. Then you go to settings. Okay. Then you go to account settings. Why? I guess that's something separate. And then recognized voices, guest connect, voice purchasing. Ah, Amazon Sidewalk. Coming soon. And they describe it all. And then you can turn it off. It says enabled. And then there's also community finding, which is a separate thing. Coming soon. Help find things with Sidewalk. See, there have been devices like the Tracker and the Tile that use Bluetooth. And they work kind of like that. If you have a Tile on your keys and somebody who has the Tile app on their phone walks by your keys, the Tile app on their phone says, oh, I see Leo's keys. And sends a note back to Tile. Tile knows, oh, that's ID number 439-222-445. That's Leo. They send you a message saying your keys were seen on the sidewalk. But this is much better because, I mean, from the point of view of finding your keys anyway. What do you think? Would you turn that off now that you know how? Or will you leave it on? I'm going to leave it on. I have a lot of Echo devices in the house. So I'm going to leave it on. 8888 Ask Leo, what do you think? We have a website. If you want to leave comments there too, you can. It's techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. That's free, no sign up, and that's where everything we talk about is. So I'll put links up there to all that stuff. Actually, our scribe, James DeRuvo, will give us a ring. Let's talk high tech. It's that time of the week. Once again, oh no. Oh, no, honey, that guy's on the radio again. He's donging him out. Oh, no, quick, find the gardening show. No, don't stay. It's fun. It'll be fun. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, I give you the unbreakable phone angel, Kimmy Schaffer. Good day. Ahoy, ahoy.
Ahoy, ahoy.
So look at that tie-dye you're wearing.
Yes.
That's really nice. I like that. Did you make it? It's actually batik, isn't it?
I don't know what it is. I did not make it. But a friend of mine, Shawnee, he posts every week on Facebook to guess the closest score to a bunch of the NFL games.
And you won it?
I've won 7 tank tops and 2 V-necks.
What? That's your whole wardrobe
so
for the year.
I have a wardrobe. And,
are they all batiked like that or tie-dyed like that?
A lot of them are these. They're all very different, but a lot of them these colors. So
wait a minute, though. You should be putting money on this if you're that good.
I don't think I'm betting properly like they do in Vegas.
Don't
but yes, I've definitely thought that.
So will the Niners win or lose today?
I haven't looked to see who they're playing. Redskins? How are they?
They're not the Redskins. They're the Washington football team.
The Washington football team. And we're going to be playing in Arizona, so go figure.
Well, at least it won't be raining.
But you know how everybody did sourdough during this shutdown?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of people are tie-dyeing. Like, tie-dyeing became a thing with the quarantine.
Something's got to replace sourdough. I'm so sick of sourdough. I was making sour everything. Finally gave up when I was making sourdough crumpets every morning. And I said, this has to end. So I put my sourdough in the freezer.
Yep. That's where mine is living too.
It'll be there till the next pandemic.
We're still in it.
Uh-huh. Who should I talk to first?
We all need a little joy in our lives.
We do.
So let's go to Joy in Thousand Oaks.
The Joy.
The Joy.
Thank you, Kim. Hi, Joy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. I'm a longtime listener.
Oh, and this is your time of year, isn't it?
Yes.
Do you enjoy the holidays?
Yes, I do.
You should, with a name like Joy. Comfort and joy. If you married a guy named Comfort, you'd really be set. Call your husband Comfort from now on. Hey, Comfort. Here comes Comfort and Joy. What can I do for you, Joy?
Okay, I have a mid 2012 MacBook Pro 13-inch, And I was wondering if it would be worth it to put in an SSD drive and up the memory, because I have programs that I don't think would run on the new stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth it if you feel like it, I guess.
Well, that helps.
Yeah, I'm going to look here on iFixit, iFixit.com, on how easy this is to do. I've done it on the 2015 MacBook Pro, and I think it is pretty easy. It's just about 10 screws on the back. You need to get a special screwdriver, because they use this weird Torx screw.
Right. I got them.
Oh, you got that. Yeah, they sell those on, in fact, they sell the parts and stuff at Otherworld Computing. It sells a lot of Mac stuff. They even sell the RAM. You have to get the right kind of RAM and the right kind of hard drive,
obviously.
Right. But if you've got all of
that. Don't have everything yet. I was thinking of the Samsung Evo 860, which is
very nice. Yeah, it might be almost, it might be overkill, because I don't think it has that fast. So the drive connects to what's called a data bus. That's the thing that transports the stuff off the drive into the memory. And I bet you on that 2013, the data bus isn't that fast. So you may be overbuying. In other words, you're buying a hard drive that's probably faster than the data bus. How much memory do you have in there?
I have a hard drive that's 748.
Oh, yeah. You want to put a bigger drive in. But how much RAM, do you know?
Memory is 8 gigabytes.
Okay. So you could double that, which would definitely make a difference.
Right.
And the drive probably in that original Mac is spinning drive, I'm going to guess.
Yeah.
So you're putting an SSD in there is going to make a huge difference in terms of performance. People think of the processor a lot, but honestly, the drive is a big part of it, because that amount of time it takes to take the data, put it on the bus into the RAM, can really slow you down.
Yeah.
So let me look at...
Yeah, I have an Intel Core i7. Processor.
Okay. Okay.
So I figured that's good.
That's very fast. Yeah, I think the the processor, I mean, it's 7 years old, and, you know, the next Mac you buy is not going to have an Intel in it at all.
No, I know.
But if you like this and you want, you know, you're going to be about $100 to replace the drive, maybe the same for the RAM. Let me see. You're going to want to put how much? Well, you know,
about 200.
Maybe. Yeah.
You know, right about there. But I figure that would be, not too sure about the new MacBooks or MacBook Air.
Here's the thing. So the new MacBook Air would be $1,000 with, and then you want to put 16 gigs, a little bit more. And if you want to put more storage in, it's a little bit more. And I would do that, because you have a Mac that you can update and upgrade, but you can't, the new ones. They're, everything's built in. There's no upgrade. I think how much do you value learning how to do this? That's part of the value of it.
Well, let me tell you, my first experience with Apple was when my brother sent me his old SE30 when I was in
school. And you fixed that?
Well, he sent me memory with it too, and
nice.
There were no instructions, so I opened it up, followed.
So it's kind of fun. You're doing brain surgery.
Yeah,
I'd say go ahead.
I did it like 10 times because it never showed up. 8 gigabytes.
This will be easier. This will be much easier. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. this is going to be a simple compared to that. So you just take the screws off, the back opens. You'll see. I'm trying to remember on that 2013. It might be under the battery, but
2012
it might be on the battery, or might just be sitting right out there. But it should be pretty easy. Just the real key on this is to get the one, you know, get the parts that are designed for that MacBook.
Right.
So MacSales.com is that's Otherworld Computing. They sell Apple Mac upgrades.
Okay.
And so you can say, look, this is the model I have.
Right.
Which RAM do I need? Which hard drive do I need? I think probably getting the fastest Samsung Evo is overkill. But they'll recommend.
Okay.
They'll recommend. Let me look. Knox Harrington just put a link up in our chat room to Otherworld Computing's video. See, they have videos on how to do all of this.
Yeah, I've watched a couple.
Yeah. I think it's a so there's a couple there's the intangible pleasure of, oh, I did this. That's kind of cool. So I'm looking at the SSD. It's just a, you know, it's a what we call an SO DIMM. It's one screw. It's got a connector. You pull it out, you put the new one in. It's the easiest thing in the world. So replacing the SSD is going to be trivial. You don't have to go under anything or anything like that. I'm not sure about RAM.
When I clone the, go to Disk Utility and clone it?
Yeah, that's probably a good idea. They will have in the video description, when you buy a new hard drive, often it comes with software to do the cloning. The problem with that is it's a laptop, so there's no way to put the hard drive in with the other hard drive. But they can sell you a little dongle, it's about $40, that you connect it to, copy everything over. So you can run a program that will just duplicate your hard drive onto the new one. That's the easiest. That's the easiest. But they'll describe that in the I think the Other World Computing video probably describe it. They say it's straightforward. Now, okay. I don't know about RAM. I'll have to look at their RAM upgrade. But
a question more. If I have a bunch of files all over my desktop, will that include those too, or should I put
them? If you clone the drive, it'll be identical.
Okay.
If you do something else, you'll have to make sure you include the desktop folder. You can see it. There's a folder called desktop in your home folder. That's your desktop. Mm-hmm. Okay. So if you use Disk Utility and you make a clone, that'll work too. There's also a program called Super Duper that will do it. It's a good one to have anyway for backup.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
It'll make a bootable clone. So if you do that, you'll have to have an external drive that you clone onto, and then you clone it back into, after you swap drives, you clone it back in. You need some way to save it, right?
Yeah.
Okay. But you don't have a giant drive, so, you know, it's not going to be too much to save. I think, honestly, I've done this to my 2015. It gave it a few more years, so I have no problem with that. You're going to want a new MacBook now that the new chips are here in the next few years, but not right away.
Yeah, well, I have an iPad Pro I bought in May.
Nice.
And I thought it could do everything, but not exactly.
No. There's difference.
Yeah.
The nice thing about the new Apple chips is they run iOS software. It's the same chip. So the new, you're going to, in a couple of years, if you love Macs, you're going to want to get a new Mac.
Okay.
But this will give you those 2 or 3 years for sure.
Great. I will try that.
Yay. You'll feel good about it too.
Awesome. Thanks
so
much.
Yeah. All right. Nice to talk to you, Joy.
Okay.
Take care.
Bye.
Say hi to Comfort for me. Our show today brought to you by our special, special sponsor, LastPass. We love LastPass. I'm a LastPass fan. Going back 12 years, it's the password manager I recommend. And LastPass has been a great friend to the show, I have to say, all year long, sponsoring the studio, they buying ads on all of our shows. I'm very grateful to you, LastPass. Thank you for helping us keep the tech guy on the air. LastPass will help keep your business on the air by protecting you, even when your employees are working from home now more than ever. You need a strong access and identity management solution. That's what LastPass does. It keeps you safe. It keeps your employees from doing things like insecure things like sharing passwords, jotting them down on post-it notes, or texting or emailing them to colleagues. It's just the best way to create long, strong, unique passwords for every site, every app, to store them, to control them. And in your business, it's really important. Your IT department, your security folks need to control password security, obviously, and they'll have the control they need from a central dashboard. LastPass makes it easy to onboard users, sync groups, revoke access. You can review password scores. You can give access, administrative even, to a select group of people, to a select group of accounts. They use strong encryption, never decrypted anywhere but on device. That means iPhone, Android, Mac, Windows, Linux, every browser known to man. Yeah, they're decrypted there, but encrypted the minute they leave that device, and your master password is never transmitted to LastPass. Multi-factor authentication, too. not just two-factor, but things like contextual information, like geolocation and IP address. Make sure that only the people who have access, the proper access to those resources, are using them. And that's what you need in business. Don't wait till the end of the year to get strong security. Start solidifying your cybersecurity strategy with the award-winning LastPass today. 8 awards this year alone. Go to LastPass.com/twit to find out how they can help you. LastPass.com/twit. Thank you, LastPass. You've been a lifesaver in a tough year. And, man, I've been using them since 2012, so they've been a lifesaver for even longer than that. I'm sorry, since 2008. Wow. LastPass.com/twit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo, the phone number. Right about this time, you hear the car music, we'd have Sam Abel Samad, our car guy, on. But we're having a little trouble raising him there in Ypsilanti. Maybe the snowfall has cut off all communications. I don't know. We'll keep trying him. John, if you get him, let me know. Let me know. Oh, he's there. So what do we do now? We're going to call him. Sam said no one's calling him. Well, we'll call him. We'll call him right now. We'll get him on the horn and talk about automobiles. Sam is a principal researcher at, wait a minute, they changed the name, Guidehouse Insights. He's also a podcaster, wheelbearings.media, and he's on the line. Hello, Sam.
Hello, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. How are things in Ypsilanti?
Oh, they're a little cooler than they were. Yeah. We had lots of rain yesterday, but it's better today.
Nice.
No snow.
Now, if I am not mistaken, you are sitting in front of a VW drivetrain.
Yes.
Why?
It's a hybrid drivetrain.
Oh, so it's a little bit of battery, a little bit of gasoline.
Yeah, so I want to talk a little bit about hybrid technology this week.
Okay. So, hybrid is what? Hybrid is, in general, is it battery-powered, but the gas engine keeps the battery charged, or does the gas engine drive the car as well?
Well, it depends on the specific implementation, but it's mostly a blend of the two.
Okay.
Hence the name hybrid. And,
okay.
And, you know, it's mostly gas, but using the battery, the whole idea with a hybrid powertrain is that, you know, with a conventional internal combustion engine, when, you know, the engine generates a lot of heat, and when you hit the brakes, it's, you know, the brake, what your brakes are doing is they're converting kinetic energy from your motion of the vehicle into heat. And that heat just gets radiated to the atmosphere. It's wasted. And so the idea is with a hybrid system to take advantage of the fact that electric motors, unlike internal combustion engines, are a reversible process. You know, if you put electricity into a motor, then it turns and makes the torque that turns your wheels. But if you go the other way, you can also turn an electric motor and it becomes a generator and generates electricity that you can feed back into the engine. And that's what we call regenerative braking when you put it into a vehicle.
Yeah, all electric, battery electric vehicles do that too.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And anything that's electrified does that. It's taking advantage of the fact that electric motors are this reversible process. Because, you know, with gasoline, once you burn it, you can't turn it back into gasoline from the – well, you can, but it's a very long, complicated chemical process. But anyway, that's a whole other story. But with an electric motor, because it's reversible, if you add an electric motor and a battery to an internal combustion vehicle, when you take your foot off the accelerator and you start to brake, you can use that. You can take the energy that your car has from the motion from this rolling, use the wheels to turn the motor and put energy back into the battery and help slow the car down at the same time.
It's kind of magic.
And then when you want to accelerate, you can draw that energy out of the battery and use it to help assist the motor. And in some cases, depending on the configuration of the system, you can drive it entirely on the electric motor if you have a motor with enough power, or drive it in combination with the engine.
Nice.
Yeah. And then there's a whole bunch of different ways that you can configure a hybrid. Do you know when the very first hybrid vehicle came out?
I'm going to guess 1910.
You're close. You're very close. It was actually 1901.
Wow. Well, I know that early cars, before we had gasoline-powered cars, they tried steam and they tried electricity. Mm-hmm. So I'm not surprised.
Electricity was actually at one time more popular than gasoline vehicles because there weren't any gas stations
around. Right. Now it's the other way around. You can get gas anywhere, but it's a little harder to get electricity. That's one of the reasons for hybrids is it eliminates that kind of fear. Uh-oh, what if I can't get a charge somewhere?
Right. And that very first hybrid, it was actually a plug-in hybrid. It was created by Ferdinand Porsche.
The Porsche.
Formed Volkswagen, and his son, Ferry Porsche, formed the Porsche car company.
Nice.
The original one that they did a year earlier was actually a battery electric. The first loaner Porsche car was a battery electric. But batteries at that time, didn't have enough.
What do they use?
Capacity to give you enough range.
Did they use lead acid batteries like the car batteries we have today? Or I'm sure they didn't have lithium ion.
I think it was. Yeah, I think it was a lead acid.
Yeah.
But I'm not 100% certain.
Yeah.
But they, because the battery technology was kind of limited, he added an engine to it to make it a plug-in hybrid.
Nice.
And then, the technology was still pretty limited at the time. And then what we know of as modern hybrids of the type that Toyota, pioneered in the late 90s.
The Prius.
That technology was actually, that concept, how it's architected, was actually patented in 1970 by TRW. They came up with the ideas, this idea of the power split hybrid, but we didn't have the electronics capability and the batteries, the nickel metal hydride batteries yet at that time to make it a practical thing to put into production. So it kind of sat on the sidelines until all the other pieces caught up, and then Toyota was the first one to implement it in a production application in the original Toyota Prius in 1997.
The only time I have range anxiety, because I have enough range in our cars to get – I don't go that far. The only place that would be far would go down to the city or the airport. That's probably the farthest. That's about 110 miles round trip. But my only fear is I park at the airport and then will I be able – will the battery drain while I'm gone for 2 weeks and then – what will I do if I get back and there's nothing left in the tank? But they have chargers at the airport. It's just that.
And for the most part, for most EVs, it should be fine. Especially where you are, where it's relatively warm, it's not extremely cold. You'll probably be fine for a week or two.
Yeah.
Some cars will drain the battery faster if you're using certain functions. Like for example, on a Tesla. They have one of the features they have is the Sentry mode.
I love that.
It actually uses the autopilot cameras as security cameras.
Right. You see a lot of video of people keying Teslas.
Yeah.
They didn't know that they're on candid camera the whole time.
The problem is to use that, it means your cameras and your computers and everything are powered up all the time.
Yeah.
So normally a Tesla will drain. It'll discharge about 1 mile a day if it's just left sitting, that's fine. That's not a big deal.
So our hybrid
in Sentry mode, it'll drain about 10 miles a day.
Oh, that's a lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's the advantage of a hybrid. Well, I've got gas in the tank, so I'll be able to pull away and get going. Are hybrids going to stay or are they going to be replaced by battery electric vehicles? What are the new, rules in California and Scandinavia against gas vehicles? What do they have to – are they going to stop hybrids? Is that going to be the end line? Are these in transition technology?
Yeah. I think we're still going to have a lot of hybrids for a long time. There's actually quite a few new hybrids being introduced, this year and next over the next couple of years. But the rules that were proposed for California – recently where they would ban the sale of new internal combustion vehicles by 2035 in California.
Right. Would that affect hybrids?
Well, the way the electric vehicles or zero emission vehicles are defined right now, it includes plug-in hybrids in addition to battery electric.
Oh,
so
okay.
Regular hybrids, no, but plug-in hybrids would be okay.
Okay. Sam Abul Samad, principal researcher, Guidehouse Insights. If you love this kind of stuff, Wheel Bearings is his podcast. You'll find it at Wheel Bearings Media, and you'll find him here every week on the Tech Guy Show. Thank you, Sam.
Thank you, Leo.
Yeah, but, you know, so it's not a, it's not an interim technology. It's actually technology that works well for people who are going to be prone to range anxiety. Like if you live in, you know, far away from the nearest charger, and or you travel a lot.
Yeah, or if you live in a rural area. I mean, you know, for certain applications, you know, hybrids are still going to be really useful for a long time to come.
Sure.
And and plug-ins, you know, are also a good solution as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I am still waiting to hear from Ford. I'm getting close.
Still nothing in your garage?
Nothing in my garage. Well, let me check one more time. I have to turn in that Audi in a couple of weeks, so we might be a one car family for a while. You know what? Not the end of the world. Not the end of the world.
It should be there soon.
Let me check my Ford Pass. See if I have a car. I checked the website and it never goes from in production to built. Empty garage. Empty garage. I wonder if the ball was dropped between, because now it's in the dealer's hands, right?
Once it's shipped from the factory, it'll be in the dealer's hands. But it should be, they should, you know, Ford's system, their back end system should be updating that once it's built.
Do you think it broke? Like they built it and it broke?
I have no idea.
They were supposed to have built it more than 2 weeks ago. And it never went from in production to built. In production 11/23. And now
it'll magically show up on your doorstep one of these
days.
Almost
3 weeks, yeah.
It might be that they're waiting until after Tuesday once the embargo reviews lifts.
Tuesday's the big day, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's when we're going to get your review.
There'll probably be some news somewhere, you know, around there.
Yeah, we're going to make your review be the hands-on technology for that week because we're all excited. I was hoping to have mine by now to supplement yours, but that's all right. Yours is great. I watched it. It's very exciting.
I'm looking forward to seeing it.
And I also saw Jay Leno in his garage with my new Mustang. He liked it.
Yeah. He had the Mach-E 1400.
Wow.
They had that one here as well when we did the drive program here. It was just static
display.
We didn't get to drive it. No.
Quite recently.
1400 horsepower Mach-E. That would have been fun.
Wouldn't let any of you guys drive it. No way. No way.
They don't trust us that much.
No way. Yeah, my order is it's well under 10,000, so I'm sure they've made it by now.
Yeah, I mean it should have been built by now. I haven't heard of any issues,
scheduled for production 3 weeks ago. I'm seeing that never made it into built or shipped or nothing. Okay. I think the computer is just broken.
Yeah, I think that's probably what it is.
It's probably on a truck right now.
It very likely is.
Yeah,
either a truck or a train.
I'll get a car from Henry Curtis Ford in Petaluma, and they'll say, "Hey, when are you coming to get your Mustang?" I'll say, "What?" All right, Sammy, thank you.
I think you're going to like it.
I can't wait. I know. I can't wait. I'm so excited. We'll be airing your review soon, so you can talk about it next week.
Good.
All right. Thanks, Sam. Take care.
Bye.
8888, ask Leo. I don't know if Santa's going to like that. Joanne on the line from Oceanside, California, our next caller. Hi, Joanne.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling. What can I do for you?
I enjoy listening very much to you. I'm not a tech person, so this is probably a simple question for you.
But that's high praise if you listen.
I'd like to know about Zoom.
Zoom. I want to
Zoom. I have an OS, a Mac OS, a Big Sur.
Oh, good. You're modern.
I like it. My question is that there doesn't seem to be an app. And I have read reviews that actually saying that Zoom is barred on the Mac. Is that true?
I'm looking here that the icons don't show up. Now, I have used Zoom, I think, on Big Sur. I'm trying to remember that. So a couple of things you should go and do. One of the thing that happened with Big Sur that's causing problems for a number of programs is Apple went further down the road of security, locking things down. And in order to use Zoom, you have to give permissions to screen recording and camera and microphone and stuff like that. So I think I'm just looking here. The issue is that you need to upgrade to the latest Zoom. The latest Zoom is Big Sur compatible. So what I would do is just go to the Zoom website and download the latest version of Zoom.
Okay.
Or when Zoom is, can you open it at all, or you just don't see it at all?
Well, it isn't. First of all, it isn't in the App Store.
No. Apple. You have to get it from Zoom. Zoom.us.
Yeah, I haven't. I really haven't gone into that site because I wanted to know.
It's safe. No, it's safe, and everybody's using it, right? You kind of need it.
Yes.
So you don't need to uninstall it. If you can get it open, I'll tell you a shortcut. Even if you don't see an icon on any Macintosh, if you hold down the fan key, that funny key next to the space bar, and hold that and space, that launches Spotlight, which is Apple's kind of searching tool. And you can just type in there Z-O-O-M and hit return. And if Zoom's on there, which I'm sure it is, it's in your applications folder, zoom.app.
Yeah.
If it launches, then go to click in the menu bar, zoom.us, and select check for updates. You'll then get an update, and it will start. You don't have to do anything more to it. It'll start working just fine. You may end up having to go into the system preferences and give it permissions to do the various things that you want to do. That'll be in the security.
Yeah.
You know that. You've done that before with other apps. No, Zoom is safe. But you're right. Not every app nowadays is in the App Store. And I don't think this one is. So you'll have to go to their website, zoom.us, if you can't find it. But try the fan key space trick. That's a good trick to know. And then you could type anything. Any application, any document, if the first few letters, it should show up, and then you hit return, and that's a quick and easy way to open it if you don't see it anywhere else.
Oh, that's great. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome, Joanne.
Glad
you called. Thanks for listening. It's nice to have a neighborhood geek that you can call, right? And then as a geek, and I'm speaking to you, I know you're a geek, it's important that... the worst thing a geek can do is goes out of my way. And I'm tempted to do this too. It's so much easier. Just get, you shove them out of the seat. You sit down, you go, type real fast. You fix it. You get it working. It's okay. And you leave. Please. I know that's the easiest thing to do. Get out of my way. Let me do it. I do this to my poor wife sometimes. And she won't let me. She's good. She's smart. She says, no, show me. Oh, okay. So the best thing to do is, if you can, walk a person through it so they get the experience. And honestly, that little trick, I love that trick where you press the, they call it the command key. I call it the fan key. But it's that thing where it looks like it's got a fan, a clover leaf on it. You press that and space bar, and that opens. You'll see a little window open up that says Spotlight Search. You can type anything in there. You type Z-O, and pretty soon, you know, it's going to start adding things as you type characters. Pretty soon, you'll see Zoom. Z-O-O. Yeah, by Z-O-O, I don't think there's any other apps called Z-O-O. By then, you should see Zoom. And then all you have to do is hit enter, hit return, and it'll open up. That's a very handy trick. On Macintoshes, because who wants to dig through folders all the time? And of course, you're a geek. I know you are. Don't pretend otherwise. So you know you do. You sit down. You say, get out of my way. And you do that. You go, brum, 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 and you do the whole thing. I know you do that. Don't do that. Show them. Show them how you did it. No magic allowed. I know it's fun to be a wizard, but mm-mm. Steve in Riverside, California. Hi, Steve. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
How you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing good today.
Good.
I'm calling about the. I have Plex, and I know that you've talked a lot about.
Plex. Yeah.
But my dilemma is that over the years I've put on my hard drive about 400 DVDs.
Wow, and, that's awesome. You need Plex. That's what you need Plex for.
My problem is that they created a what they call a VOB file.
Yes.
When I recorded the DVDs.
Yes. So that's what's on the, you know, that physical disc, the DVD, has files called VOB and VTS.
Right.
That's, those are, you know, it, honestly, a DVD is just a data disc like any other. And the data on there are the video object files. Those are VOBs. And then the VTS is the kind of the menu structure, the video title set. So that's, if you wanted to make a duplicate of the DVD, that's what you'd want. In most cases, it's not what you want on your hard drive. You just want the movie. You don't want all the files that were on the DVD. I mean, you might, because there's extras and stuff. So Plex should understand the VOB file. Shouldn't have any trouble with that. Does it not?
It doesn't seem it. That, yeah, no. When I try to play it, it says it doesn't recognize that file.
Okay.
And so from the research I figured out, I have to convert it to an MP4.
Probably, yeah. That's what I do. You know, Plex used to do this. I guess it stopped. So I'm not sure why that is. But yes, simple enough. So what you can do is convert all those files. Are you on a Mac or Windows machine?
Windows.
Okay. So you need a program that will take the, you basically have an image file of the DVD and convert it. And the one I recommend is free. It's called Handbrake, just like a brake in a car, B-R-A-K-E, Handbrake.
Okay.
And it's free. It's easy. It's very fast. Really, it's just a front end to an open source program called FFmpeg. And what you'll be able to do is, and if you go on the forums of Plex or you go to Reddit and the Plex forum there, or you look in their help files, they'll recommend the format to transcode to. But probably it can handle MKVs, but probably you want MP5 if you have the choice. But you'll see Handbrake has lots of presets. So you'll open the VOB, the folder with all the VOB files in it, and you'll say transcode this into an MP5, and you'll be done. Should be pretty easy. I'm looking. There are ways to play a VOB file, but I think probably right now, the problem is you have so many of them. That's a lot of transcoding.
Yeah, and each one of them, each movie has the VTS files. They've got 1, 2, 3,
yeah.
4,
that's 5. The menu structure.
And how do you know which ones you need to do?
Well, you don't. You won't have to with, you know what, instead of doing Handbrake, which is a transcoder, Chatroom is saying you should probably use Make MKV instead, also free. And what Make MKV does is it just it bundles all of those files, the VOB and VTS files, into a single file that Plex can read.
Oh, yes. That'll
be a lot faster for you because it doesn't have to change the encoding. The VOB files are MPEG 2. Actually, are these UHD or regular? Are they Blu-ray? Or are they just regular?
No, almost all of them are standard.
Yeah, so a standard DVD is an MPEG 2 file with AAC audio in the same blob. It'll just take that, wrap it with the MKV wrapper, which then Plex goes, oh, yeah, I know what that is.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That sounds a lot simpler.
It'd be a lot faster.
Not that many to do.
Yeah.
I started doing them individually, and I'm going, I'm not going to be doing this.
I think Make MKV even has a batch mode, which means you could just drag them all onto all the folders onto there and go to bed. It'll take a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you'll be done. MKV is not a data format. It's a wrapper format. So it takes and it wraps up. It keeps the VOB and the VTS files. It doesn't change them, but it wraps them up in a way that Plex can handle them.
Okay, perfect. That sounds good.
Okay. And from now on, instead of ripping the whole DVD, you can use Handbrake, open the DVD in Handbrake, and just make the movie file, which is usually all you want. And that'll just be a single file.
That's for me. I don't go into all the other, you know, extra stuff.
Yeah. Anyway, so. The nice thing about doing what you did is you do have all the extras, anything that's in there, all the menu structures and everything. But I don't know. Yeah, I think Make MKV preserves everything. So you'll have the chapter information. You'll have the menu structure. So you play, and you're going to love Plex. I mean, it just, it becomes like, you know, exactly what you want, which is a nice directory and everything. It's so easy. And it'll even go out and get the album art and all that stuff.
Yeah, and I have a lot of music. I got 6 terabytes of music, too. So
yeah. Plex is awesome. I'm a big fan.
I knew you talked about it, and I've tried to work with it for about 6-8 months. And
yeah.
And I just haven't been able to make it work, so.
Yeah. And it, you know, over, yeah, once you get the MKV, it'll play it. You can again use Handbrake if you want to save space and make it a little bit smaller, that kind of thing. But that's, you're with 500 movies, that's a lot of work. It's cheaper to have storage, buy more storage than do that, yeah. Good, have fun.
Okay, thank you.
All right, take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here. The tech guy, time to talk about computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, you know, all that jazz. It's the digital background noise throughout our entire lives these days. When I started doing this show, let's see, in the early 90s, it was really a kind of a back alley, basically. It was a little subculture on, you know, in the world. There was geeks, and very few people really spent any time on the internet. In 1992, nobody. PCs were PCs, just about that, you know. There weren't any smartphones. There weren't any tablets. Dude, the Palm Pilot hadn't even come out. Now, the computers are everywhere, in every part of our lives, constantly. The internet has connected everything. I mean, in it's amazing, really, in 30 years, the landscape has shifted 100%. The computers and technology are everywhere. So, and I understand, you know, we had a joy call last hour, said, I'm not a geek. I don't understand this stuff. But you still have to use it, right? You still use it. You can't not use it. If you have a car, you use it. If you have a microwave, you're using it. It's impossible to stay away from it. You don't have to even have a computer. If you have a phone, a smartphone, chances are you've got the most powerful computer you've ever owned is in your pocket right now. So we got to deal with it. We don't have to become experts. You don't have to become a geek, certainly not. But we kind of have to know about it. We kind of have to understand it, at least if nothing else, for defensive reasons. But also because, and it's unfortunate, one of the things that's happened, because technology is so widespread, and because the internet is so ubiquitous, and because almost all of our news and content now comes not through the TV, the radio, comes through the internet, on Facebook, on Twitter, on blogs, on posts, on new, even if I read the newspaper on the internet, right? If you're lucky enough to still have a newspaper in town. But what's happened, unfortunately, because of that, is so much of what we see now on the internet is what I call link bait. Because there's huge pressure on the writers, the publishers, the companies behind these sites. Huge pressure. It's true for Facebook, too, to get you to keep looking, to keep reading, to click that link, to follow that article, because they want you to see the ads. And so more and more articles, you'll see this more and more, are what we call link bait. The headline is link bait. The link you see on the page is link bait. And what I mean by link bait is they don't give you information. They pose a question without an answer, usually, or they write something that makes you want to click it. 10 great ways to have a better night's sleep. Perfect link bait. Then you read the article and it's like, well, have a cup of hot cocoa? Come on, really? You got to write an article to tell me that? There's nothing new in here. But there's huge pressure on all these people to write this stuff, to crank it out, to get 10 articles a day, get 1,000 clicks per article. You know, that's their job. That's their paycheck. They're relying on that. And so we are constantly now bombarded by junk. And if you scan headlines or you watch Facebook or whatever, a lot of what you see, it misrepresents the actual fact of the matter, the case. And that's why you need to listen to this show, why we need to, for defensive reasons, understand what we're looking at and that it's junk, it's link bait, you need to build up some armor. You need to build. That's what this show is for, is building up armor against the constant assault on your attention. This week, 46 states plus D.C. and Guam went up again, and the Federal Trade Commission accused Facebook of monopolizing, being a monopoly, acquiring Instagram, acquiring WhatsApp. They did what monopolies classically do in order to prevent competition, you know, to keep their monopoly. They acquired companies that were threatening to them. They put other companies out of business by blocking them, or, you know, all sorts of tactics that you can use to put the small and, you know, nascent companies out of business before they ever become a threat. There's a lot of evidence. I read the 124-page suit from the Federal Trade Commission. They have a lot of evidence, a lot of emails, a lot of information they got from, you know, subpoenaing Facebook, from investigating Facebook. And I think they have a pretty strong case, but I don't know what you do. My wife said, that's unfair. You can't say, you know, okay, it's okay to buy Instagram, it's okay to buy WhatsApp, and then 5 years later say, well, no, never mind. No takesy backsies. She's right. I mean, you can't, what are you going to say? Well, we made a mistake. We shouldn't have let you buy that. You got, maybe that's what they'll do, but you got to find a remedy that makes sense. My remedy is never to use Facebook, but even if I don't have an account, but even if you don't use Facebook, as I don't, Facebook still tracks you everywhere you go. You know that? They call them shadow dossiers. And when Mark Zuckerberg testified in front of Congress about 6 months ago, he said, I don't know what you're talking about. Shadow what, CAs? He said, I don't know. What is that? But he knew. Because every page you go to nowadays has a little Facebook like button on it, doesn't it? Well, that tells Facebook you're visiting that page. And they're collating information, whether you have a Facebook account or not, about you. What are they doing with it? Well, it's not like they're spying on you. They're just selling it to advertisers. But they're definitely doing that. Both Facebook and Google, you might think Facebook's all about connecting people and, you know, finding out what your family and your high school sweetheart and stuff are up to. You might think Google's all about, well, just, you know, searching the internet, finding stuff. No. Both of them, their main business is ads. They're advertising companies that have provided services for free designed to get information about you so they can sell that to advertisers. They don't, by the way, another thing, this link baity, so I won't do it. They don't give information about you to advertisers. Of course not. That's the gold. They're not doing that. They keep that information to themselves. But what they do is they say to advertisers, do you want 23 to 48-year-old men living in Northern California who have an income of $100,000 or more and are driving a late model Ford? Do you want that guy? We can sell that guy to you. They do even worse. Do you want somebody that's slightly depressed right now, having a hard time, out of work? Do you want that person? We can sell you that guy too. That's creepy, isn't it? That's not nice. But they can do it. Facebook particularly knows. Google knows from what you search for, but Facebook knows from what you post, what you read, everything you do on the internet, exactly what your state of mind is. And they're not afraid to use it. In fact, we know this because you can go on Facebook, try it yourself, and say, I want to buy an ad. I want to buy an ad from a guy identifies as Republican but votes Democratic. I mean, it's amazing how deep you can go on this stuff. So I think the FTC has a good case there. We'll see. It's going to take years to wind its way through the courts. Facebook has very, very expensive lawyers defending it. Maybe nothing will happen. But even if nothing happens, these are good, these suits, because they remind companies, you don't get to do whatever you want. There's always the risk of scrutiny and even lawsuits from states and governments and the federal government. And maybe you should think about that. Think twice. Facebook never thought twice. Facebook did full speed ahead. In fact, their motto used to be move fast and break things. They did. But now we've got to pay the piper. it'll be interesting to see what happens. It's going to be years. It's going to be a long, long time before this is resolved. And I don't know what kind of resolution we're going to be able to get. I don't think they're going to be able to say, you got to give, you get takesies, backsies. You got to give back WhatsApp and Instagram. I don't think that's going to happen. Our show, we're going to get to the calls. 8888 Ask Leo. Let's have a conversation, you and me. I don't want a monologue anymore. I'm done talking. You, let's talk to each other. 8888 Ask Leo, the website techguylabs.com. I'm here to help you defend yourself against technology. 888-827-5536. TechGuyLabs.com is the website. Everything's up there. If you see something, there's no charge. Please use it. It's for you. We'll have more right after this. No link bait. Our show today brought to you by Twilio. Love the Twilio. It's time to build. If you want to do telecommunications, if you want to add communications to your app using the telephone network, using maybe chat or text messaging, emails, even phone calls and video, Twilio is the way to engage customers no matter where they are, no matter how they want to engage with you. Twilio's the big guy. 795 billion interactions across channels with five nines of uptime. 3 billion phone numbers. 3 billion in over 100 countries. Twilio, if you're looking to add telecommunications to your app, is the easiest way to do it. If you already know web development, a couple of lines of code and suddenly you've got all these new features, chat or texting. It's so simple. It's easy enough, even I can do it. In fact, I have. I have had a Twilio account for years. I love Twilio. Shopify loves Twilio. They use Twilio's Flex to run their entire global contact center. That's a million customers. Flex is Twilio's programmable contact center solution. Blue Apron uses Twilio to send out those newsletter emails. You get those? That's Twilio SendGrid doing that. I know. You probably use two-factor on your Netflix. I hope you do. If you do, that multi-factor authentication, that's provided by Twilio. In fact, Twilio does my favorite authenticator app, Authy. That's free. I use Twilio every day, come to think of it. Ride-sharing, contactless delivery services like Lyft and Uber. When you get that text message, your food or your driver's on the way, you got it. They're using Twilio. Product and operations teams use Twilio to create new ways to communicate with their users inside applications, ranging from account notifications to text messaging to even to chatbots. I mean, it's kind of amazing what Twilio can do. I want you to check out Twilio. It lets your developers control the global communications network with just a few lines of code. That's because it's built by developers for developers. You don't need to be some sort of wizard specialized telecom engineer to build an incredible communications app. You just need Twilio. If you can already build, if your developers can already build web apps, they know how. It's so easy to build apps that text, call, chat, video conference. Strengthen your customer relationships by uniting communications across your entire business. Go to Twilio.com to learn more today. Twilio.com. Twilio. It's time to build. We thank Twilio for supporting the Tech Guy podcasts. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. So Naples, of course, is the home of pizza. Oh, it's so good. But somebody told me, you know, when Naples invented pizza, it was a part of Greece. So really, pizza is a Greek dish. I don't want to hear that. Putting my thumbs in my ears. Don't want to hear that. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888, Ask Leo, the phone number. Craig's on the line from Santa Clarita, California. Hi, Craig.
Hello, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. Welcome. How are you?
Good. Your friendly Hollywood production designer here has a difficult question.
Let me ask you a question. How's things going? Are you getting work? Are productions coming back?
Yeah, well, see, I am so lucky and just blessed that I happen to accidentally work in animation.
Oh, cartoons don't get COVID.
No. Well, the thing is, because live action, you know, you have to have actors there. You have to have grips there. You have to have, you know, construction guys there. And they, you know, our union has a huge set of rules to try to keep them safe, but it's still really hard.
So you do production design for animation.
Yeah.
Are animators able to work at home?
That's what we're doing. And that's kind of part of the question comes into this.
Okay.
So we all, you know, it's one of those things that basically we sit in the building and then sit by ourselves in offices or cubicles and make the movie. And we could just as easily do that from home, and we are. So it is working. We're it's a little slower, maybe 10% slower, but we're getting stuff done.
That's not bad. That's not bad. And the fridge is right there, and if you want a ham sandwich, you can. So there's certain advantages.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Or a nap or whatever.
Or a nap. That'd be my temptation. You know, I'm a little sleepy. Let me just close my eyes for a little bit.
Yeah.
So what can I do to help?
So we are basically doing everything over Zoom and Google Meet.
Yeah.
And I have two big machines that I do all my, like, 3D modeling design, and I do, like, paint in Photoshop.
So isn't that funny? So you're not sitting there with rice paper and pen and ink. All of this is on the computer these days.
Yeah. I mean, I did when I worked at Disney in, like, the 90s. I worked on Hercules and Mulan.
Oh, wow.
You know,
That's cool.
But around Treasure Planet, we switched to
It's all it's all digital now. What software do you use?
I use Photoshop to paint in mostly, and then I use, like, Maya and Blender. Maya, like, the standard.
Sure.
That's the part to make the movie in.
But it's interesting to me that you use Blender, which is the open source version of 3D modeling. Very powerful. Yeah. Hard to use, I thought, but maybe it's easy for you.
Not as hard as Maya. Maya is, I think, one of the most complicated programs on the planet.
Yeah. Interesting.
To get to my question, since I'm working in Zoom or Google Meet, and I have an entire art department to kind of direct, and for some reason I have been singled out as having massive video and audio, and it's really hard. And Netflix, I'm working for Netflix right now. They sent me a little Mac i9, what is it, the MacBook Pro?
Yeah, the 16-inch. Very nice. That's what Anthony, our guy, uses. For motion and Maya and all that stuff, yeah.
And that one doesn't experience the lag, thankfully. So I have something, but I can't draw in it, because it's not like
an iPad. So you're supposed to draw over Zoom or Google Meet? You're supposed to actually...
Often. So I'm looking at artwork of my artists, and I'm making corrections and trying to explain. Wow. Trying to explain something visual, verbally, is not...
No, but it's hard because there is lag. You don't notice the lag so much when you speak, although you might when, it's like watching, CNN and they say, and now we go to our correspondent in Budapest. Joe, how are you? One, two, three. I'm fine. That's the lag you're talking about. And in voice, if a lag is half a second, you don't really notice that. But if you're drawing and the pencil's half a second behind, you notice that.
Yeah, I also find that I'm interrupting people.
Yeah.
And the conversation is really difficult. And then I'll have, someone presenting their artwork, and they'll be talking to me about one part of the painting, and they're on something else. I'm looking at a house, and they're talking about them. And it's like, wait, and it really literally takes like 2 seconds for the screen to update.
I know.
So that they see what they're doing. And the Mac Pro laptop works fine, but my 2013 Mac Pro and my giant PC with two 2080 Ti cards and an i9 and 128 gigs of RAM, like, both of those lag, and they're on Ethernet only, and the laptop is on Wi-Fi.
I understand why the 2013 maybe, but that beast that you have of a desktop should easily outperform your MacBook laptop. Yeah. Especially because it's hardwired. Wi-Fi is notoriously latent and slow compared to hardwire.
Right.
I guess I would look at what's running in the background. Do you have to use Zoom or Meet? Could you use other software if you suggested it? You're the boss.
I could suggest that we change it.
Let me ask. Chris Marquardt's here. He's getting ready for his photo segment. Chris is... among other things, an expert in an open source tool called OBS Ninja, which we've started using instead of Skype because of its low latency. Chris, would that, can you do screen sharing in OBS Ninja?
Yes, you can do screen sharing. Latencies are fairly low. It's a bit more involved than clicking an interface like in Zoom. It's a bit more command line style. But once it's set up, it's...
It uses WebRTC, which is an open source technology. And the way it works, instead of having a program running, you do it in your browser and you send somebody a link that they click. And tweaking the link is what Chris is talking about. It takes some practice. What's the website, Chris? He does a consultancy on this. What's the website?
It's obsnacademy.com.
obsnacademy.com. Okay. And that would be one thing to look at. The other thing is make sure you don't have any big programs like Google Chrome, which is a pig, running in the background on these things. Because background processes are also going to give you more latency. They're slowing you down. You don't have Maya open while you're doing this, do you? Yeah, see, because so some of this is that the processor's doing something else.
Yeah.
It's weird that your beast of a computer with all that RAM.
Yeah, it should do it.
Especially if the Mac can.
Right, it's a little laptop.
Yeah. Good. So that's why I'm thinking there's something going on because you have this big machine with lots of RAM. You might have left Photoshop open.
Well, I have tried turning everything off, and I still get it. Could it be something in the router that, you know, is...
Well, you're using the same router for Wi-Fi and wired.
Yeah, exactly. It's a little Nighthawk.
Boy, that's a mystery. That's a mystery. We often have people close everything and actually reboot, which closes everything, and make sure nothing else is started up again.
Right.
That would certainly be something I would try.
So I'll try rebooting and keeping nothing on.
Yeah. We deal with this all the time because we, of course... You know, all of our hosts, like Chris is on the line from Germany. You know, he's using OBS Ninja. Right. But we have a lot of our guys are using Skype. Meet, I've my experience with Meet is it's terribly laggy.
Maybe I don't know Meet anymore, guys.
It also could be the people you're talking to. Remember, they have their own issues.
Yeah. But it seems across the board that I...
You're the problem.
Yeah.
And how much, what kind of bandwidth do you have?
I have 5 up and 70 down.
Okay, that's a little weak. 70's not much.
I could sport for some more. I mean.
What do you think, Chris? Would that help?
5 up is a
five up's weak thing
for that. Because you can actually not really use more than like half of that.
Right. If you used all of your upstream, you would have no downstream.
Yeah.
So I would look at getting better bandwidth. When you do a bandwidth test, the other thing to look at is jitter. It's too bad. There used to be a really useful tool that Berkeley used to have. They've stopped doing it. That would let us look more closely at our connections. But jitter is a big influence on latency. It's the variation. It's like heart rate variable heart rate. Sure. It's the variation in time between packets arriving, and that a lot of jitter means. It could really be a big problem. So sometimes we talk about ping time and stuff like that, but really jitter is the and you want jitter to be as low as possible. It's measured in milliseconds. That would be one thing I would look at. And it just may be your network is bad. It may be that I would check the cable on that big box. The big box has enough horsepower. It's something to do with the connectivity. And so I would look at the cable you're using, make sure you've got a good cable. But also, I would sure try to get more than 5 up if I were you.
Okay. Is there a difference between, like, the newer Ethernet cables and the older ones?
Yes.
In this case?
Yeah, get a nice new cable. Get at least a Cat 5 cable. And yeah, and it can, cables can, believe it or not, can go bad. So,
okay.
Sounds like you got a great gig, though. Netflix is spending a lot of money on production. That's exciting. Can you tell us what show you're working on, or is it a secret?
I can't yet, unfortunately.
How exciting.
On it, but it's not official, so I can't.
That's fine.
All I can say is it's got a lot of the comedy greats in it.
Oh, wow. I can't wait. You must be having a blast. Craig, I don't know if we've solved your problem. I have to run, but it's a pleasure talking to you.
Great talking to you, too. You give me ideas, and thank you so much, and I love your show.
Well, thank you, and I bet I'll love your show, too. Have a good one. Take care. It's time for our photo guy. If you like digital photography, and it doesn't have to be with a fancy camera, even your smartphone these days is a pretty darn good camera in it. This guy is our hero, Chris Marquardt. He's my photo sensei at sensei.photo. And as you heard, he is more than just a great photographer. So we were talking about with Craig, OBS Ninja. You've become an OBS ninja. That's pretty cool. It's another way of making video phone calls. We're using it right now with Chris. Chris is in Germany, and we've got a perfect connection. It's amazing.
And a very fast one at that, too. The latency, the delay between me saying something and it showing up on your side is really short. I use this for my own video productions because I'm a podcaster, as you know, and I do a lot of these as video now too.
We're moving.
So I'm kind of following your footsteps. The things that you've done 15 years ago, I'm trying to do now. So
we're following your footsteps because we're moving everything to OBS Ninja.
In the middle of Corona, I found out about this new tool. The developer has ramped it up because of the pandemic, because he knows that people need these kind of tools to get something that looks and sounds a bit better than the usual suspects. And I've really dug in deep. And
it's free to use. It's open source. It's OBS.ninja. You can do point-to-point calls. You can do group calling. A little more geeky than Skype or Zoom, a good test will be in a couple of hours when Scott Wilkinson does the first live streaming Tuba Christmas LA. Mm-hmm. I know you worked with Scott. It's coming up at 3:00 Pacific time in about 2.5 hours. If you want to watch, just go to 2020.tubachristmasla.com. TubaChristmasLA.com. Yes, it's Tuba Christmas Carols, and they'll be using OBS Ninja. Thank you for helping him. So today
I'm looking forward to. I'm actually staying up for it because it'll be about midnight when they start. But of course, I'm gonna watch. Hey, 100 tubas. I mean, who doesn't love 100 tubas?
It'll be fun. Now we're going to talk about winter photography.
Yes,
right now. So tell me,
It's winter. It's winter time all around the world. Well,
Northern Hemisphere. Yes.
On the Northern Hemisphere. Yes. All around the globe, on the Northern Hemisphere, and we're just beginning to get the first kind of It's not really that cold right now. It's not as cold as maybe a couple of years ago, but it's starting to get frosty at night. And we had a little bit of snow. I expect more in the next few months. And winter is photographic.
I think it's beautiful.
It's
a challenge.
And it is a challenge, and it does a lot of interesting things. So one of the things I love is winter landscapes. And of course, you can use all the other things we've talked about here, like reflections. The picture you're just showing is a great example. Reflections work well. Winter reduces your color palette. So it automatically does what I keep telling people, reduce the things in your photo, reduce the color palette. So it kind of does that for you.
So this is a color photo, but it looks like it's black and white because there's so little.
And then, I mean, snow, of course, it covers things up. So it kind of makes things look uniform. If you look at frost, that's a great opportunity if you're into macro photography. Get your macro lens out, get
Jack
close
frost.
On these
early
morning frosty leaves and things. If you go to the next photo, if the light comes from behind in frosty conditions, that's when you get those little spikes on the sides of things to really show. So
Really pretty. I know you love this so much that in years past you've actually gone to the Arctic Circle to do photography. Yep. Up to Svalbard. Yep. In the land of...
Well, up to Svalbard and into Russia and into Siberia.
Wow.
Even. So,
wow.
Yeah. I enjoy this a lot. So,
you know, and you don't mind being cold, I think.
I got good clothing.
I'm a Californian.
There's no bad weather, you know.
And this just looks chilly to me.
Yeah. So another thing you can play with in winter is the colors. And there's the tendency in winter is the colors get a bit cooler. So I like to play with that. If you move forward in this gallery, then there's one that kind of puts this on its head because it's all warm. It's a warm sunset. So whoever shot that cranked up the white balance, and it's kind of doesn't look right. Right? It looks like you're somewhere in the
something's
Caribbean
wrong.
And
yeah. I and see if you, snow if you on the snow on the shore, but then this golden sunset, and it's a mismatch, isn't it?
It's a mismatch, and if you go to the next photo, that's where the photographer has used the white balance slider in his software to move that towards the cold. So
he's
this
made
is really, has a bluish tint.
Blue, yeah.
So that is really wonderful.
This looks like my lips. Blue. Gosh, does that look cold? You're right. This,
and
you
of
know,
course,
is a little. The sunset picture is a little. You don't know why initially, but makes you.
It's a bit
a little uncomfortable. Just, yeah.
Yeah. Something.
And then
wrong
this.
With that.
I know I'm cold, but at least it's all cold. It's frosty.
Yeah. The photo feels right.
Yeah.
And then the whole reduction in color palette means that if you have something colorful in a photo, that will become your subject. That'll be the one thing that sticks out. In this photo, that's a big tree and a fence, and then there's this red building on
this
the side.
This is the classic New England red barn in winter photograph.
Yes.
You've all seen
it. Definitely. So landscapes in general, I mean, I love landscapes. And then again, combine whatever you want, whatever you know about photography. In this case, there's trees on the horizon and then there's fields in the front and they make lines. And those lines just guide your eye towards those trees in the
background.
And it's
just beautiful. Some really nice shots. Now, one of the problems, and we've talked about this before, when you're shooting snow, it's so bright. And it's so white.
It tells your camera to get it to make everything gray to take the exposure down. And there's this little dial on most cameras. It's called exposure compensation. Just dial that up a little bit to +1, +1.5 in snowy conditions. If your pictures are too gray, that will make the snow look like snow. Make it white again.
I had a realization the other day because I have, you know, as you know, pretty much overspent on cameras and lenses. I have some fancy equipment.
Oh, really?
Yeah, really. But I also have, you know, a smartphone like this iPhone 12 or my Google Pixel 4, which still is probably the champion in photography. And normally, if you're not even thinking about it, these camera phones, just they're great because they do everything for you. But they do too much in some cases, and I realize it justifies my buying a fancier camera because the camera phones are always trying to brighten things up. They're trying to make the sky blue. They're overdoing it. You
the
lose
phone
control.
Doesn't know your intention.
Yes.
The control thing is really something that I miss when I shoot with a phone. So that brings me back to that makes me go back to the bigger cameras, to the more professional cameras.
That's sometimes. What I realized. If I want creative control, things like that exposure dial, I need to have a camera that gives me those dials, that gives me those buttons and that control, and can let me say, no, what I want to see is silhouettes by the firelight, not a brightly lit scene. And if you're taking a scene with a fireplace and the Christmas tree and it's beautiful and your camera blows it out because the phone says, oh no, you got to make sure everything, you can see everything, you ruin the picture. So now I understand a little bit better why it's my justification for having a fancy camera. But a camera phone, actually, you can, in manual mode, you can fix a lot of these things at some point.
Yeah, there's apps for that.
Yeah. Chris Marquardt, he's at Sensei, S-E-N-S-E-I .photo, where he can help you become a better photographer. And he joins us every week. One word, what's our assignment this week, this month?
ugly.
Ugly.
Beautiful pictures of ugly things.
Ugly. I'll tell you how you can play when we come back. Ugly. That's fun. Thank you, Chris. Doing double duty today.
Absolutely.
Helping us with OBS Ninja and photography.
No worries. Thanks for letting me have a plug in there.
Yeah, no, always want to give you a plug. And thanks for helping. I'm really glad you...
And I will stay up for Tuba Christmas. Yeah. That is such a... I've already talked to the developer of OBS Ninja if he shouldn't have a new slogan like OBS Ninja, making remote connections better one tuba at a time. I think that would be perfect.
So he's aware of them doing this. That's really great.
Oh, yeah. I told him about it. I told him about it. He's got to watch it too, for sure.
Oh, that's so cool. So they're...
And they...
The challenge for this was that they can't do it live, obviously, because of COVID-19.
Yeah.
So they're going to stream a bunch of different performers using OBS Ninja. They're not going to play at the same time, though, are they?
I think there will be a couple of remote performances.
Wow.
I think live performances, but it's a mixture of interviews, discussions, interspersed with, as far as I know, interspersed with pre-recorded video. So, but it will be streamed live. They will do the talks live.
And, that's nice.
Yep, they will use OBS Ninja.
That's
for that.
Really, really exciting. I can't wait to see that. So if you go to 2020.tubachristmasla.com, you can see it says live in 2 hours. So that's very exciting.
Yes, yeah.
And you, my friend, have a wonderful... I'll see you next week, yes?
Let me have a quick check, but I think 99.9%.
And yes, then we're in reruns on the 27th, so you don't have to do anything on the 27th.
Okay.
But we will be back, of course, for the new year after that.
I'm here on the 3rd, on the 10th, and the 17th.
Yes, good. So
if you want
let us
to
know
have
about
me,
the 20th.
I'll be here.
I do, of course. But let us know on the 20th if you want to take
that. No, I'm here.
Okay,
I'm
good.
Here next week.
Good. See you next week then.
Nothing special. Leo, thank you.
Happy holidays. All right. Yeah,
you
we
too,
were
bye.
Lisa and I were talking. I said next year Christmas markets in Germany. She said,
oh, I'll be happy to take you around to a few of those.
I really want to do that. There's nothing like it. Thank you, Chris. Take care.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Does Tay Tay have a Christmas album? Of course she does. It's very lucrative. You know, that's the... they usually spend a day in somewhere in July. They say, hey, let's just record some quick Christmas covers because we're going to make a lot of money come December. 8888 Ask Leo. Speaking of Leo, let's go to Orange County, California, where another Leo awaits. Hello, Leo.
Hello, Leo.
How are you?
I'm doing great.
What can I do for you today?
Thanks for taking my call.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for calling.
What I would like to know is I would like to get some outdoor security cameras.
Yes.
And, I want to let you know I have an Arlo right now, an Arlo Pro.
Are you not happy with the Arlo?
I'm not happy with them because sometimes it pings and half an hour later it shows up in my library.
Oh, that's annoying.
Yeah. Well, that's the Arlo Pro. I think they're not...
doing it anymore.
Or, yeah.
Yeah. A lot of companies said, we're going to get into this business.
Yeah.
And then after they did it, they go,
Yeah, it actually sucks.
There you go. That is an unvarnished review of the Arlo Pro, ladies and gentlemen. Leo says, somebody's going to put that in the review. Leo says it sucks. So I use Nest cams. They make an outdoor camera, but they're also really expensive. One of the things you're going to find with these cameras is they take up a lot of bandwidth. Because in order to stream live video, you know, if you've got the bandwidth, you're golden. The Nest cameras do need one wire to plug them in, but they can do Wi-Fi, so you need to have a Wi-Fi access point near enough.
Okay.
Nest offers a not inexpensive but very good service so that you can get the recordings. I've never had an issue with delays. It will also notify you on the phone if there's motion or sound. You can immediately check in, and I've never had any delay doing that. But They're pricey. The Nest is owned by Google, so, you know. But I will tell you, I'll give you an option that is a lot less expensive. This is the company that we've mentioned before for indoor cameras, Wyze, W-Y-Z-E.com. And they've just started making an outdoor camera. It's a brand new product for them. But it's $50 for the starter, which includes a camera and the base station. And then additional add-on cameras are $40. So the price on these Wyze is so much lower that I think, you know, it's worth trying them. I've had very good success with the indoor cameras. Now, these are a little different. They use a battery. They don't plug in. So that means you can put them anywhere at all. They are going to stream back to their base station, but they're not going to do live streaming. They're going to stream only when there's movement. That's the only way you can do battery, because if you know you can't stream continuously with a battery. You'd be charging them up all the time. But because they only record when things are moving, they say you get 3 to 6 months.
Well, the Arlos are also battery.
Okay.
So I'm used to that.
Yeah. So I think Wyze does a good job. It's certainly at the price, it's inexpensive enough to try it. I personally love my Nests because they are wired and record continuously. So at any point I can see what's going on. Plus, if something's happened, I can look back in time. You have to buy an additional subscription. They'll store it for you online. Wyze does not require a subscription. They now do offer a subscription as well for storing online. They keep changing this, and I'm not up on the latest, but get the starter bundle for $50. That's one camera, $40 per additional camera. It's just now shipping, I believe.
Well, that's a lot cheaper than the Arlo.
I know. It's hundreds of dollars cheaper than anything else out there.
Right.
So the way they work is, they have a micro SD card you can put in there that they will record to. But you can also have them, you can pay a subscription and they will record. I think they even for free will record a certain amount in the cloud. And of course, you can have the Wyze app on your phone so you can check in on it at any time.
Okay. Well, I do appreciate that very much.
Two choices. My pleasure, Leo. Nice to talk to you.
All right. Same.
Yeah. Two choices. Happy holidays. So for the low cost, I mean, you can't beat Wyze. And it's worth everybody. Just look at Wyze, W-Y-Z-E.com, because they make, you know, they're up in the Seattle. Their goal is to take the low end of the market. They said people want, you know, smart bands, smart watches. They want cameras. They want, you know, headphones and thermostats. They want robot vacuums, but they don't want to pay the huge prices. So they sell them much less expensively. My experience has been they're very good. The basic Wyze cam is $20. That's an indoor camera. Then if you want pan, tilt, and zoom, it's $30. That's amazing. But there are, and they have a video doorbell for $30. I mean, they're, so I think they're smart. The price point is low enough that you could probably, like Leo will, buy it and just, well, let's just see. You know, it's the same, it's basically the same idea as the Arlo. It's, you don't need a plug-in. If you're willing to plug it in, I think you're going to get a better result. The Nest cameras I use, and I have, you know, it's funny. For years I said, I'll never put a camera outside my house. I don't want to be that guy, that paranoid guy. But then once I did, I started putting more and more in. I think I have three or four around. I have four because I have a Hello doorbell and three cameras, so that pretty much the whole area is covered. You kind of get hooked. It's probably, you know, I'm not in a high risk area. I'm not too worried, but it's still fun. You know, oh, there's some movement on the deck. What's going on out there? Hey, you kids, get off of my deck. That kind of thing. Sal in Chicago. We're just talking about the Wyze cameras. What do you think, Sal?
Well, I was just going to let you know that Wyze just came out with some new outdoor cameras. They are wired.
Oh, good for them.
Version 3. And I jumped on right away because I'm a backer and a beta tester for them. And Leo, I got to tell you, these outdoor cameras in the dark are amazing.
There you go. An unsolicited recommendation. Now, are they actually selling them yet? Because
I think they're on their webpage.
Okay.
Because I'm a backer, I get the...
Yeah, see, I don't see them on the web. Oh, wait a minute. Wisecam V3, but that's the indoor V3.
So, no, they're indoor-outdoor.
Oh.
And I have Yi, I have Nest, I have the other Wise. Leo, I cannot tell you how it lights up a backyard or a street. You would swear there's lights on.
In color.
It's amazing.
In color, which a lot of cameras won't do. They're black and white at night.
Right.
This is a pre-order. They ship next month. No subscriptions. You get a two-week rolling cloud storage. You can also use a micro SD card. And because they're wired, you can continuously record now, right?
Correct, yes. And it's only like $1.50 or $1.99 a month to have their Wisecam Plus.
That's
well
worth it.
But they also have SD cards in there.
Yeah.
So you're able to do both. And I'm telling you, whatever the pictures they show on their website, that's exactly how good it looks. I can't believe how it lights up the front of my street.
Sal, I'm so glad to get an unsolicited recommendation. These are brand new. You got them a little earlier because you're a backer. So it's really great to get that recommendation. I hope Leo's still listening. Sounds like no reason not to go with it, right?
I tell you, I bought a couple, and I got a couple for my parents, and I hooked them up. They're real easy, and the app works great. And somebody asked in the chat room, they update their security quite a bit.
Yes, Wise is good on security. Thank you so much, Sal. Really appreciate it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That's great to get that. Your timing couldn't have been better. Did you just call just now?
I did. Well, I've been watching you since the ZDT, all that. But
oh, nice.
I go in the chat room, and I watch you live.
What's your handle in the chat room?
Sal. But I was going to change it to Sal the Wise Guy because I buy everything wise.
It's nice to have somebody with some real experience with these. I've been very impressed. I had the pan tilt cam and the regular cam when they first came out. $30, $20. Amazing. Very impressed. But I haven't tried any of their outdoor stuff. So I'm really glad to hear that. I might have to get some.
Yeah, they're coming out with their home security system. You could pre-order
that. I see
that,
yeah.
And I ordered their vacuum. It's like a take off the Roomba.
Yeah, they got a Roomba for $200. Yeah.
Yeah, so I bought that, but I should be getting that in January. And they just...
What's their deal? How do they do this? I mean, this is better. I'm looking at these pictures on this thing.
I don't know.
This is better than anything Google's doing for 10 times the cost.
I'm telling you, I can't believe it. I bought... Like, I ended up buying four, two for my parents, two for me. I hooked them up, and I was just floored. And I was thinking of calling you yesterday, but I was doing stuff while you were on. And then all of a sudden, this Leo calls, and I'm like, I got to call you.
I'm so glad you did.
I'd love you to get a couple.
That was so timely.
The picture quality is amazing.
Yeah. That was so
I don't know how they do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know either. I don't even understand how this company exists, to be honest with you.
They are just making everything.
Yeah. I think they're really just saying, look, all that other stuff, they're taking you for a ride. It does not need to be that expensive.
No, and if somebody had asked in the chat room, we are constantly getting updates for our software. Now, I know being a beta tester, I get quite a few, but I have to tell you, even when I call, if I have an issue, they're great on support. They really are. What a great company. I wish they were local to me. I'd love to go work for them, but
I know.
Seattle, so far for me. But
I think they're impressive as hell. Yeah. Wow. It works with If This Then That. Works with Amazon's Echo. This really is impressive. Yeah. Person detection. How's the people detection and the package detection? Well, they don't have package detection yet. That's one thing I like about my Hello doorbell. It says somebody left a package.
Me too. That's what I have, the Nest the doorbell.
That's what I have,
They said the package is coming. People detection seems to be getting better. I'll usually submit because being a tester, if something's not right. But it's not bad, and they focus in on what the movement is if you go back into your notifications.
Wow.
They're really good, I'll tell you.
It's impressive.
I think you would love them, and that guy Leo would love it.
Good.
Come outside. Even through a window, Leo, they're phenomenal in the dark at your street.
I'm looking at these pictures. You say that's what you're getting. Wow.
That's what it is. I wish I could send you my pictures, but yes. What you see online, I thought, no way, but I'll try them.
That's amazing.
It's amazing.
Yeah, because I don't get color pictures on my Nest.
Me neither.
They're monochrome, yeah.
I mean, I started Nest because of you when it was Dropcam.
Right, Dropcam. Yeah, we had Dropcams all over the place.
I still have a few working. They're starting to phase out now. They're just getting too old. And they're not.
Yeah.
I went to all the other Nest ones outdoor, and
really, that's why I'm on Nest, is because I was a drop cam guy, and so I just kind of followed through. But now I might. I don't want to take everything out and replace it, but boy, these are really amazing.
You're gonna want to put these up for you. Outdoor now. I'm telling you, that's what I'm going through right now.
All right. From now on, no more Nest. It's all going to be Wyze. I'll tell you, the subscription, that's a big deal.
Oh, yeah. It's like $15 a camera per year. They have a special going. Oh,
such a good deal. Because that's where I get burned by Nest, is the subscription.
Well, I was too for years, even though their new subscription.
They reduced it. Yeah, the Nestaware is much more affordable. I think that's because I think you can thank Wyze for that, frankly.
Oh, yeah, me too, because everything's going up. Now I have Yi, too, which you recommended.
I like Yi. Well, you do listen, Sal. Oh, wow.
I do. No, I take your recommendation.
Thank you, Sal. Well, I trust you, so I appreciate your calling in. I'm really glad you called in.
Sure. Well, thank you very much, Leo.
All right, Sal.
Anything you do, and something else comes up, I'll...
Please do.
Thank you.
Happy holidays. All right.
You too, sir. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Well, ho, ho, ho. How are you today, Leo Laporte? The tech guy, time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo is my phone number if you want to call and talk high tech. 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you could still reach me, but you'll need to use Skype out or something like that. 8888 Ask Leo. Word coming from the Associated Press just minutes ago. Hackers, Dateline Washington. Hackers apparently got into computers at the U.S. Treasury Department and possibly other federal agencies, touching off a government response involving the National Security Council. We are taking all necessary steps to identify and remedy any possible issues. Reuters reported Sunday that a group backed by a foreign government, these are the ones you really got to watch out for. We call them nation state actors. They have resources and capabilities far beyond that of the independent rogue hacker. Reuters reported Sunday that a group backed by a foreign government stole information from Treasury and a Commerce Department agency responsible for deciding internet and telecommunications policy. Intelligence agencies are reportedly concerned that other agencies were hacked using similar tools. And that's all we know right now. Breaking news. It is a big problem. I think we've said this before, that wars are less likely to be waged in the real world these days, much more likely to be waged in the cyber space. And there's all sorts of things an adversary can do, not just hacking. Well, it usually involves hacking, but malware, taking over the national's electricity grid, things like that. And we've seen these intrusions before from either countries that are adversaries or countries. Most often, I think it has to do with financial gain. This one looks like it has to do more with national security. So we'll keep an eye on that one. 8888 Ask Leo. John on the line from Nashville, Tennessee. Hey, John. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. What can I do for you, John?
Hello, Leo. I'm here.
Yep.
I've got a question about my LG OLED TV.
Yes.
I'm getting severe burn in on it, and I don't know why or
what. Oh, dear. What is getting burned in?
Channel logo emblems mainly.
Jeez.
Nat Geo and a few others in that one corner that's stacked on top of each other. It does not go away. And I've got lines going through on the bottom, and I got other stuff in the middle of the screen. So it seems to be very, very sensitive. And I don't leave it on that long at all. I mean, certainly don't have it on pause on anything.
You know, I've had an LG OLED for 5 years. I had a Samsung for even longer than that, and not had any problems. So what they normally do is they slightly shift the pixels over time so that nothing can be burned in. So I'm puzzled.
Yeah, you and me both. I didn't think they did that.
Well, I mean, any screen can have burn-in. Usually OLED burn-in can be corrected.
I've tried using the panel, clear panel noise numerous times.
Okay.
About a week straight, and it did not fix nothing.
Well, now I'm...
So I don't know what else to
do. Wow. Burn-in does occur. All the screens I know of, including the LG screens, do things to prevent that. And, of course, we're seeing OLED everywhere. I mean, all smartphones now, all the expensive smartphones anyway, use OLED, organic light-emitting diode screens. I'm looking at reports that those LG OLEDs do sometimes get burn-in. Wow. Here's an article from CNET that says, burn-in is possible with OLED, but not likely with normal use. Most burn-in, and this is what I thought, is actually image retention, which should go away after a few minutes. You'll almost certainly see image retention long before it becomes a permanent burn-in. So I have never had problems with burn-in. CNET says burn-in is not a problem for most users. So I don't know what's going on. You're watching the same, you know, if you're watching ESPN all day, every day, or you leave it on, I guess, potentially. And there are ways, as I said, there are ways supposedly that'll fix this. But I have no solution for you if you've tried this and you can't fix it. Burn-in, according to CNET, is not usually covered by warranty. LG explicitly says image retention and burn-in are not covered. So I guess it's time for a new TV if it's really bugging you. It can't be too bright. It can't be too strong. In normal, you know, normally you don't have to worry about it. In fact, even on older screens, the real issue would be if you leave any streamer on or any cable box, it will go into a screensaver mode, right? So you're not going to get burn-in. If you had a video game and you left it on the same video game for a long time, you could have burn-in. You should never on any screen leave a static image on for long hours. But even then, OLED screens and most screens I know of do this pixel shifting. You can't see it, but it's enough to make it not keep it from burning in. Make sure you use the cinema mode instead of the vivid mode. That's a less bright mode. It's actually a more accurate mode. Vivid is really, or demo, sometimes they call it, or in-store, is designed to look brighter because, people buy brighter screens, frankly. It's not what you want once you get home. I don't know what to say. I'm sorry that this happened to you. It's not supposed to happen, and unfortunately, it looks like LG doesn't cover it. Anybody have any suggestions besides, you know, the software we know about to try to fix this? Let me know. Peter in Brooklyn, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Peter.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. Thank you, sir. I recently updated to the Mac Mini with the M1 processor.
Oh, nice. How do you like it?
It's good. The only problem I'm having is that I have an external hard drive that's 4 terabytes. It shows up on the, it's mounted, but when I double click to go in, I can't see the files at all.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I tried Googling, but I couldn't. I said, let me go.
I wonder if this is a Big Sur issue as opposed to an M1 issue, because you have to use a Big Sur, of course, on a new Mac. That's their latest version of Mac OS. And Big Sur has locked down more things than before. So the first thing I would do is launch Disk Utility. Have you tried this?
No.
Launch Disk Utility and see if you can see the drive as one of your mounted volumes. I guess you can because you can see it on the desktop.
Right, right.
Yeah. And then once you're in Disk Utility, look at what the drive format is.
It's NTFS.
Ah! Okay. Well, there you go. So Apple has historically had trouble with this Windows file format, NTFS. If you wanted to use this for any length of time, I would reformat it to something that both Windows and Apple can read, like XFAT. In theory, You should be able to read them, although I think Big Sur in particular has had trouble with NTFS. So you're confirming that. So there are programs you can get to allow you to read this. You want to make sure, though, you're going to get one that is M1 compatible.
Even which one, Leo? I'm sorry to cut you off.
So,
I downloaded the Paragon, I think it was.
Yeah, Paragon, yeah.
It was compatible, but for some reason I can't get it like to operate. I guess I got to maybe operate through there. I can see the drives, but I can't in Paragon.
Paragon will install a new driver, so you have to reboot, but it may not be Big Sur compatible. There's also an open source version called Fuse, Mac Fuse. Maybe try that. I'm looking at a earlier Macs could do this, but I'm looking at it. Apparently, Big Sur has taken out NTFS compatibility. So this is something new in NTFS. You can in terminal. I'll tell you what. I'm going to put this link in the show notes because I don't want to walk you through a terminal command. But I'm looking at an article on how to read and write NTFS on macOS Big Sur. And they do have a terminal command. You're going to be editing your FS tab. I hate to do that, but that's looks like what they want you to do. So there are ways around this. And then you mentioned Paragon, which is a third-party NTFS driver, and that should work. Once you install Paragon, there will be a drop-down in your menu bar that should show all your drives. So see if you can do that. That's $20, which is not too bad. Go ahead.
It does show, Leo, but how do we access it?
It's supposed to let you access it. Maybe that drive is not – maybe there's something wrong with that drive at this point. Can you see it on other machines?
Yes. Okay. I had a MacBook Pro 16-inch with Intel, and I recently said, you know what, being the Mac Mini was almost quicker than it.
Oh, you're going to love that Mac Mini, you bet. Yeah, yeah. I don't know what's happened. I'm not sure why you can see it but can't read it, but it's guarantee you it's NTFS. What I would suggest is take everything off that drive, copy it to your old Mac, reformat it to XFatters. Is there some reason you're using NTFS?
No. I guess it was set up for Windows before.
Yeah, format it with the APFS, the Mac file system. You'd be better off. It could be encryption. I'm looking at this is a post, discussions.apple.com. Just got a new Mac Mini M1. Can't read the files. Maybe this is you. Are you DKB? no? So a lot of suggestions. I'll put a link to these in the show notes and you can look at them.
Thank you.
Yeah. Ultimately, get rid of NTFS. It's really for Windows. It's not designed for Mac. This is what I would do. I would go to, since you can, your old Mac can read it, and I presume you still have it, copy the files off and then just reformat the drive. Use Macintosh, the old Mac file system, HFS Plus, or I think you can now with Big Sur. Actually, I think you could do it with Catalina. Format external drives, APFS. That's the preferred file system for Macs going forward, and I think that's probably be the best thing to do. It's more reliable, too. This episode of the Tech Guy Show brought to you by Good Grooming. Good Grooming. It's one of the things I have to say, I think, in quarantine that has gone by the wayside. I know my wife, and I'm thinking maybe your spouse feels the same way. She likes good grooming. The holidays are here. And if you're looking for the perfect gift for that guy and you're not sure what to get, can I make a recommendation? It is the number one wished for gift of the year. Not wished for generally by the guy getting it as much as by the gal lives with the guy getting it. I'm talking about Manscaped, the best in men's below and above the belt grooming. Manscaped is here to ensure you're taking care of your manhood and your nose hairs and your ear hairs with their new performance package. Naughty or nice, my friends, it's time to perform this season. Manscaped's performance package is the ultimate men's hygiene bundle. It makes for a great gift. It's a gift. You know, it's great. It's a gift that engenders laughter and maybe some embarrassment, but at the same time, it's really functional and smart, and he's going to love it. He's going to love it. Imagining opening this attractive box, which as soon as he sees it, he's going to start laughing. I promise you. But you get all sorts of cool things inside. By the way, their brand new weed whacker. This is an ear and nose hair trimmer. I got to tell you, I have a friend. He's not too old. He's in his 40s, but he's got a forest growing out of his nose, and out of it. It's like, I don't know if he's trying to grow a mustache from the nose. I don't know what he's up to, but when I'm talking to him, David, I'm talking about you. I look at him, and it's hard for me to look him in the eyes because I can't help but stare at the forest he's got coming out of his nose. Maybe Dave should get a weed whacker for the holidays. It's waterproof. It has a really nice 9,000 RPM motor powered 360 degree rotary dual blade system. No nicks, no pulls, easy to use. And I don't think I'm alone. 79% of partners polled admitted long nose hair, major turnoff. And you shouldn't be plucking them. That's dangerous. They can get infected. That's not good. You need the weed whacker. And while you're weed whacking, maybe you'd like to mow the lawn, if you know what I mean. The lawnmower, this performance package includes the Lawnmower 3.0 trimmer. Amazing. The best trimmer ever for your, you know, various regions. It's got an LED light in it, so you're never exploring in the dark. It's got ceramic high-speed blades, very quiet. It's not noisy, not clattery. It's not like, you know, the old clippers. This is really good. It's narrow, so it's got great race course turns. It's hard to describe, but you know what I'm talking about. Dads can't stop talking about it. The teens will be embarrassed. They'll turn bright red, but then they'll take it off and they'll go, oh, thank you. And of course, the women and partners in your life will love you for it. 'Tis the season to get Manscaped. Get yourself, your dad, your brother, your friends the best gift of all, the Manscaped Performance Package. And by the way, inside the box, their famous liquid formulations, the Crop Preserver Deodorant, the Crop Reviver Toner to maximize your hygiene. The one must... Never mind. Get the performance. I'm turning red. Get the performance package now to receive their two free gifts. You get the Manscaped boxers in there and the Shed travel bag. Really nice travel bag. The performance package is a great package. The best value Manscaped has to offer. Brand new, just updated. Plus, I love this, 20% off and free shipping. It's not too late. It's not too late. You have time to get it. Go to Manscaped, manscaped.com/twit. It's a fun gift, but it's a practical gift, and he will thank you for it, and so will she. Manscaped.com/twit, 20% off and free shipping. What are you waiting for? Go whack your weeds. Make Santa proud. Manscaped.com/twit. Thank you for supporting the Tech Guy Show. Now on we go. When I want to get up to feel good, get excited, I listen to the boss, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. No, not my wife, Bruce Springsteen. I listen to her, too. 8888, Ask Leo. Thanks, Professor Laura, our musical director. Always cheering me up with some great tunes. I appreciate it. Daniel on the line from Fresno, California. Hello, Daniel.
Hey, Leo.
How are you?
Pretty good.
What's up today in Daniel's life?
I am having an issue when after I log into my Windows 10, I get a notification that I have a problem with my Microsoft account.
Uh-oh.
And it says that the password has probably been changed. So I go in, I click on the notification, it says it has to verify who I am. So I enter my PIN, it seems to accept it, and everything seems to work okay for a few days, and then I get the notification again. And it just keeps happening and happening. It's been about...
How annoying.
3 weeks now that I'm getting this message.
I don't know why it would be doing that. It's not keeping track of it. And So here's a couple of things. One thing, maybe turn on two-factor authentication. Do you have that on?
No, I don't have that.
Okay. Do you have a smartphone, Windows, iOS or Android? Yeah. Get the Microsoft Authenticator app on there and log into that on your smartphone. And from then on, you can use that app to log into Windows if you need to. Usually you just use your PIN. But if it says that, you'll be able to say, okay, just send me a note. And your phone will say, is that you trying to log in? You say, yes. First of all, that'll be a lot faster. But I also think that it might tell Microsoft that you're taking the extra security measures, and it might just be enough to say, hey, whatever's going on, knock it off. I recommend everybody do two-factor anyway. It's much more secure. I know, it's kind of ironic because remember in the early days of Windows, Windows 95 and 98, the password really meant nothing. If you forgot your password on those early versions of Windows, you said, never mind, I don't have a password, and you still log in. But starting with Windows XP, and certainly with all the most recent versions of Windows, the password has become more important. And at the same time, Microsoft's done something I don't like at all. They've made it harder and harder to use just a local password. More and more, they've required you to use your Microsoft account to log in. That's what you're doing. And I find that extremely annoying. It's getting harder and harder when you get a new Windows system to get around that. You actually have to disconnect from the internet to do it. And it's frustrating. This, in the most recent versions of Windows, they've basically prohibited that. You have to use a Microsoft account. There are reasons you might want to use a Microsoft account. For one thing, it will remember all your settings and your contact list and all that information, and it'll populate it. Just like when you use an Android device, you log into your Google account, suddenly it knows you and it knows everything about you, and that's easy. It's convenient. But there are also good reasons why you might not want to use a Microsoft account. I like to set up a machine with a local account and then associate my Microsoft account. But since we are going to use the Microsoft account, turn on two-factor. I think that'll probably help. The Microsoft Authenticator app is available for it's free for iOS and Android. From now on, when you log into Microsoft properties like Office or your Windows, the first time you do it, it'll say, "Oh, we're gonna, you got to verify this on your phone," and they'll say, "Click the number 83." And you go to your phone, and the phone says, "Well, what number is it? 83, 26, 47, or 22?" And you say, "Well, it's 83," and they go, "Yep, that's you," because you're proving it's you through the phone, right? You only have to do that usually the first time you log in. I always set up a Windows Hello fingerprint, face, or a PIN, if your device doesn't support that, to eliminate having to enter the Microsoft password. I'm not sure exactly what's going on, but try, just, see if that helps it to turn on the authenticator, the two-factor. My guess is, there's something stuck. But, like maybe Microsoft, normally what would happen is Microsoft would save a cookie when you log in and say, yeah, he's verified. And then it wouldn't bother you again for 6 months or some period of time, a longer period of time. It sounds like the cookie's not getting set properly. So my theory is, and it's just a gut feeling, but I'm often right on these. If you turn on two-factor, maybe that'll kick it. It'll go, oh, okay. He's good. He's good to go. 8888 Ask Leo. Maybe you had this happen and you have an idea. I'd love to hear from you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, and we have, now this might help. There's somebody who's posted in the, thank you, Uncle Bic, a support thing on resetting OneDrive. Did he say it was OneDrive that he was having trouble with? This is interesting. There's a OneDrive reset that won't lose any data, but will then, this might be all you need too. So we'll put that in the show notes, techguylabs.com. Yeah, I hate it. The OneDrive is constantly pestering me. Rod, of course, editor of the Ad Astra magazine, editor-in-chief, I should give you your full title. He's a longtime fan of space, as I am. We talked about our love of space from way back when. Author of a great book called Space 2.0. Hello, Rod, from his boat in San Diego Harbor. Can you hear me, Rod? Oh, he can't hear me. I can see him. He can't hear me. All right, oh man, I got them all set up and everything. We want to talk about, I'm very excited about what happened with this new Mars rocket that Elon Musk launched. But I'm going to have to text our rocket man. He can't hear me at this point. Well, I'll tell you what, while we're getting that working, John, maybe you can figure out what's going on with Rod. I will take another call while you do that. Jeff in Bakersfield, California. Hello, Jeff.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. This is probably a quick answer to this question, and I'll try not to get too tongue-tied with all the letters here.
It's so easy, isn't it? All those acronyms and all that stuff. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, man.
Anyway, I have two monitors on my computer. I have a second one that's connected via a DVI cable. And the second monitor just takes up too much room on my desk. And I have an older digital monitor. I'm sorry, an older analog monitor that I wanted to swap it out with.
Yeah.
So I went online on Amazon and I saw several adapters I could buy from DVI to analog. Basically a female DVI to a male VGA.
Right.
And I thought, oh, piece of cake, order one of these. They're, you know, $7 or whatever, and put this thing together and I'm set to go. So I started reading a few reviews on some of these, and one guy pointed out some things that I did not know. I'm not the most computer savvy person in the world, but anyway, I guess there is a DVI-D and a DVI-I. So I looked at the back of my computer, and I have a DVI-D connector, and what he explained in his review was that if you're trying to get an analog signal, you need to have a DVI-I.
Oh, man.
Basically, I'm assuming as you know, I'm sure you well know, on the DVI, there's a set of pins, and then to the right of that, there's a flat pin.
Right.
And I guess a DVI-I adapter, I'm trying not to get tongue-tied here. A DVI-I adapter has that flat pin surrounded by a set of four pins.
Right.
Individual four pins.
Right.
And he said in his review that that's what transmits the analog signal.
Right.
And so I'm...
So DVI-I has both analog and digital. DVI-D, which you have, just has digital. Doesn't mean right. You can't use it. It just means the connector you're going to get is going to be more expensive, because it has to have a DAC inside, a digital to analog converter. So it's totally doable. It's just not, but I'm so glad you did the research, because you would easily have bought a cable that just didn't work. The less expensive cable is just passing through the analog, because that's available on DVI-I, but D is digital. So there is no there's no analog output.
Right.
That's fine. I mean, that happens all the time in computing. You have an analog device like speakers or a television or a monitor, and you need to convert the bits coming out of the computer into a waveform. So that's why you have to get a DVI-D to VGA adapter.
And I'm not finding those on Amazon. So are they a rare breed or...
What is the analog you want? Is it VGA or?
Yeah, it's VGA, right?
VGA. I'm looking at one for DVI-D to VGA, $31. But let me make sure this is. I mean, it's on Amazon. It's from a company called StarTech. It's StarTech.com. StarTech.com.
Okay.
So. I mean, I'm really glad you did the research, because you could easily have bought something, you know, for $10 that wouldn't work. But I think you just have to have something that's going to do the analog conversion
right.
for you.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. This says the DVI to VGAE active DVI-D to VGA adapter lets you connect a digital DVI output from your desktop or laptop to a VGA monitor projector, saving the cost of upgrading to a DVI-D display. So it sounds like this will do it. And it's only $30, 1920 by 1200. But you'd expect that, because VGA, He was not notorious for being high def or 4K, but actually still high def. So yeah, this is this looks like it, and you could tell it's doing a little more because it's got a bit of a box around the VGA adapter. That's probably the converter in there.
Okay, is there a model or a part?
Well, I would just I just searched the StarTech store, StarTech.com. Doesn't say a model number. It just says DVI-D to VGA active adapter converter cable. That's the difference. It's active.
Okay.
Right?
Oh, so it's an actual cable?
Yeah, it's a short cable.
Okay. Okay.
It's a little cable. You're going to need a regular cable to plug into it because it's a female out on the VGA side.
Okay. Okay.
So you need a VGA cable.
I was strictly looking for an adapter without the cable, just an adapter.
Yeah, that's what this is. Yep.
Oh, okay. Okay, yep. Perfect.
All right.
All right. Well, that helps.
Have fun.
I appreciate it. Thank you very
pleasure.
Much.
My pleasure. See, we got through that alphabet soup. Rod, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Oh, my guy's here. Our Rocket Man has appeared. I don't know what was going on, but I'm glad you're joining us from your beautiful boat in the harbor. You know, I was
happy belated birthday.
Oh, thank you. Thank
you're
you.
We're the same age for 10 months.
Yep, we match. Yeah. We all watched with interest as Elon launched his, it looks like something out of Flash Gordon, his rocket that's eventually going to be used to go to Mars, and then tried to land it. Oh, just missed it by that much.
That much. Yes.
Now, there was nobody on that explosion, right? That's okay.
No.
I mean, it's expensive.
He's not going to be flying. Yeah, they're costly. But, you know, that said, he's been very clever about this. So he's going to be flying them without crew for years. It's primarily going to be a cargo vehicle for quite a while, at least till 2023. But he's been very smart about this. He set it up from the very beginning as an assembly line. So it started in San Pedro, California, in a big tent down at the edge of the harbor. Then moved some of the operations to Florida, but set up pretty soon in Boca Chica, Texas, where most of this is happening now, and where he's moved, by the way. Elon has left California. He's fed up with us, and he's moved to Texas. And set it up as an assembly line. So while this one did explode upon returning, which is, of course, immediately what all the news outlets seized on, rocket explodes upon landing, the fact of the matter is the test was 95% successful because the hard stuff was all before landing, really.
They even put up a banner and said, a great success. I'm watching it burn. But that
and he's got
another one
ready to go. Well, he had hoped, but, you know, he himself said, look, I give this about a 33% chance of total success. They ascended.
We've been so spoiled by how easy they've made it look. But this is hard stuff. You're riding a giant explosive device into the sky and then trying to land it? Okay. Hey, I got one more question before we go on with that. I want to ask you one more question.
Okay. Sure.
Former Israeli space security chief says aliens exist and the president knows about it.
Yes.
Is that true?
Shades of the Weekly World News. He at some point said something about, yes, I have knowledge of this. I don't recall in that headline anything about
anybody
from Israel.
Nobody really believes
that.
But,
you know, I think there's a reasonable chance he might be from another world, so it's hard to say.
Rod Pyle, we've run out of time because we had a late start, but I'm glad you did not explode on landing. Editor-in-chief at Astra, author Space 2.0, our space guy, Rod Pyle. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, it was the weirdest story. Former Israeli space security chief. He said, oh, no, I've seen it. I've seen all the documents. They exist.
Yeah, of course they do. By the way, we didn't get a chance to talk about it, but tonight and tomorrow morning are the peak of the Geminid shower.
Why don't you come back? Because you got such a short show, a short shift.
Sure.
Come back. Stay here. We'll come back after the ads because I do want it. I love that stuff. I love it.
Oh, it's a fantastic shower.
Yeah.
It's cold.
Yeah. Is this the biggest one of the year or is Perseids? Perseids are bigger, right?
They're about the same. This one's going to appear to be bigger because it's a new moon. So if you're somewhere dark, you could see as many as two every second.
You're kidding. Oh, man. Yeah. I want to get up on the roof.
And I saw, pursuant to your name, I saw the Great Leonid Shower of 1966 as a kid where it just looked like God was dumping a salt shaker in the sky.
Oh, amazing.
Hasn't happened since then, but it was terrifying and breathtaking at the same time.
But this would be a good one to go out tonight for and look
for. If you can stand the cold, this would be very good. And tonight's
unfortunately,
the night to go.
It's raining here, so I don't know.
Oh.
I don't know if we're going to have clear skies tonight, unfortunately. We've had such clear skies for the last month.
Well, these things go on for a few days, so if it stops the next couple of days, it's still worth it, you know, because basically the Earth is traveling through a big gravel bank across its orbit. This one's weird because it comes, it's one of only two major showers that comes from an asteroid instead of a comet. So apparently this asteroid was
tell us all about that. That's interesting.
We'll do.
That sounds cool. I'm sorry, I'm eating lunch.
That's okay. You have a busy schedule.
Do you know what was what the audio issue was? Did you? Is there something that you've figured out?
What? No, I was on OBS Ninja. Everything looked fine, and I was just waiting. So I don't know what was going on. What did you hear on your end?
No, I saw, and we could see you, but I could tell you couldn't hear me. I had talked to you earlier, and you couldn't hear me then. I thought, you know, I knew you were, I could hear you, I could actually hear, because I can hear you listening to the stream, so I was getting audio from you.
How odd.
So I guess you're just not, you weren't hearing me, and then did you do something that changed things?
No.
Flip a switch? It just started working.
No. The settings were on Scarlet like they're supposed to be, and everything, nothing changed on this end. The only thing I changed was my camera source, because for some reason my digital outside camera was freezing. So I changed to the Mac camera. But all the audio has been set to Scarlet the whole time.
That's so weird.
Puzzling.
It's not you, it's me. You couldn't hear me. So is your headphone plugged into the Scarlet?
Yeah.
Hmm. That's very strange.
So, but I'll work with John a bit, because if I'm doing something wrong, obviously I want to get it fixed right away.
Yeah, we didn't do anything here. So next time, John, call him a little early and check the audio to see if he can hear me. Yeah. But you did call him early, and I could tell he couldn't hear me, but I could hear him. I just thought, he's not listening.
No, I was sitting here since a quarter after.
Yeah, no, I was watching you, and I was I was talking to you.
I'm moving stuff and walking around.
And nothing happened. Puzzling. So I guess couldn't hear me. No, don't worry about it. But we're going to get a little extra time. So here we go. I can see him walking down the hall towards me. Oh, my God. It's Darth. Oh, wait a minute. No, it's Rod Pyle. Hi, Rod. You scared me.
Search your feelings, Leo.
I find your lack of faith disturbing. I wanted to bring Rod back because, first of all, we got a short segment. But there's you mentioned after we finished, there's something coming in the skies that I wanted to give everybody a heads up to. What are we looking for?
So tonight is the peak of the Geminids meteor shower. And when I say tonight, I mean after midnight, because after midnight, the Earth turns into its orbit. So all these meteors that are these stones that are sort of scrambled along our orbit are sitting there. It's like a big gravel bank in orbit. Will actually be hitting the atmosphere face on.
So really, it's shooting stars. We're going to see shooting stars.
Yeah, you're going to see.
You probably don't like that phrase, because they are neither stars nor are they shooting.
No, but it's very romantic, you know? But these happen every year. So as you pointed out earlier, there's the Perseids in the summer and the Geminids in the winter. The nice thing about this one is it's a new moon tonight.
Oh.
So if you're in a dark place, you could see as many as two every second. And a lot of them are like tiny streaks, but occasionally you get big ones.
Now, what's the best way to see these? You kind of want to open your peripheral vision and just kind of not look for them, but just kind of look up and hope to see them and then turn your head to them. Is that how you do it?
Yeah, I usually, you know, if I drive out of town, which, of course, living in L.A. most of the time, in San Diego, I have to.
Yeah.
I just park, put a blanket out on the hood of the car, lie back. The windshield gives you a nice angle. You know, it's like a lounger. And you kind of look up towards the North Star.
Oh, okay. That's a good tip.
In that general area.
Okay.
And you'll see them, and they appear to come from all over the place. When they say they come, you know, from Gemini, hence the Geminids name, it just means they originate from there, but they head off in all directions.
Yeah.
So it should be a good show.
It really has nothing to do with the Gemini star constellation, right? It's just the part of the sky.
No, it just appears to come from that general area.
What are we looking at? Cold, what is it?
This is the detritus from an asteroid that crosses the Earth's orbit. And usually it's comets, but this one comes from an asteroid. And it's just a bunch of gravel and ice left behind from when that thing passed by.
Wow.
And the Earth passes through that gravel bank. If it's too cold to go outside, or if you just don't want to for some reason, you could tune into space.com online and they show them live. It's not quite
the same. I don't want to
watch them.
I don't want to watch it on TV. All right, space.com will live stream the meteor shower. Is it a meteor shower?
It is.
That's what you call it.
So.
Okay, the meteor shower tonight. A meteorite would be if it landed. Do they ever land, or they always burn up in the atmosphere?
Most of them don't, because it has to be pretty big. It would have to be probably bigger than a softball or a grapefruit to actually hit the ground. But when they do, interestingly, even if you find them relatively quickly, they're often covered with frost because the entry is so fast, even though they heat up and begin to melt a little bit, the core is cold. So they're not sitting there starting fires and burning like they do in the movies, you know, not like the War of the Worlds.
They're like little snowballs from heaven.
Yeah, really cold rocks, yeah.
It is, but the reason we see them is they are in reentry. They're burning in the atmosphere, right?
Yeah, depending on what they're made of, they can burn green, they can burn bluish, they can burn bright white or yellow.
Cool.
So if it's green, it's got some copper in it and so forth. And I saw one once in years of doing this that went from horizon to horizon and exploded twice.
Whoa.
And of course, you don't hear it, but you see these fragments showering off.
That's
and it's
cool.
Just, it's really well worth it if you can stand the cold.
Rod, I'm so glad we got you back, because that is always a fun thing to see. After midnight tonight, look northward and get a blanket, because it's going to be chilly. But if you've got clear skies, you might see as many as, what did you say? A couple every minute?
Two per second. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. All right. You might.
Thank you, Rod Pyle. Space 2.0 is his book, editor-in-chief of Ad Astra. I'm glad we get a little extra time, because I think that's fun. I want people to know about that. Take care. Last call of the day is Lex in Richmond, Virginia. Hello, Lex.
Hey, Leo. Thank you so much for taking this call. It's
a pleasure.
The mystery and the science and the dark art of Wi-Fi extension in a home.
It is a dark art. It really is. Yeah.
We have a room that is no more than 35 feet point to point, where my wife has intermittent drops of our internet.
Mm.
I'll be downstairs at the same time on the web, and everything's working fine.
So you're saying it's 35 feet from the base station of your Wi-Fi access point?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's a frame-built home.
Okay.
And,
so it doesn't have a lot of metal in the wall. It's a wood and drywall.
That's right. And Fios is the provider.
Oh, so you got a lot of bandwidth coming in. So there's something. I mean, there's something. So believe it or not, Wi-Fi really is a line-of-sight technology, believe it or not. It works through walls, but, you know, that's serendipity. It doesn't, and you know, as I mentioned, metal will kill it. Drywall is not so bad. You know what's bad for it? Humans. We're big bags of water. Wi-Fi does not go through us. So one solution might just be to move the access point, particularly to move it higher up.
Okay.
So it's always best to put access points to the top, close to the ceiling, or even in the ceiling, because then humans don't get in the way so much, or dogs, or any other things. So that's, before you even go out and buy something, that's one thing you can try, is just positioning the access point differently. And that may do all you need to do. But if it doesn't, I don't recommend extenders, because the way extenders work, they're not what we call full duplex. They talk half the time to your wife's machine, half the time to the base station.
Yeah.
So they are one half the speed just because of the way they work.
Right.
So that's why a lot of people choose mesh. I'm going to give you another option that I think is maybe just what you need, which is called power line networking. This is a fairly inexpensive thing to do. It uses the electrical grid in your house like Ethernet cables, like cabling. Because it's sharing it with power, it's not as fast as Ethernet, but you have a lot of bandwidth. You should be getting better connectivity that way than, say, with Wi-Fi, certainly with bad Wi-Fi. And all it takes is you plug in something into the plug socket in the wall that you connect via an Ethernet cable to your router. And then at your wife's end, you plug another thing into the wall, and that could either be a Wi-Fi access point or an Ethernet cable that she can plug into her computer, your choice. So you need two ends. They're going to talk to each other through the electrical circuits in your house. And as long as there's no junction box in between them, you're going to get good throughput. TP-Link is the company that makes, well, many companies make these. TP-Links are the best. They're very cheap. You'll be under $100 to solve this whole thing.
I saw some complaints on Amazon with TP-Link in terms of their terms of service here and data back to the home company.
Yeah, they're a Chinese company, but you know. So if you don't want to use TP-Link, use somebody else. I wouldn't worry about that.
Now, if we need wireless upstairs, though, the power line adaption and then
that would work. You could do that too.
Bridge router.
Yeah, I've used TP-Link sells a Wi-Fi access point. So you just wire that in upstairs.
Gotcha.
And now you got Wi-Fi from the TP-Link or whoever you buy upstairs as well. I've used them. It works very well. Modern power line networking is a lot better than the good old days. Your grandpa's power line wasn't so hot. That would be my recommendation. We're out of time. Thanks to Lady Laura, our musical director, Kim Schaffer, the phone answerer. Most importantly, thanks to you for listening. I appreciate it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a safe geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.